We would like to welcome you to the April 23rd, 2025 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of the commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation, and use of areas using a special historical culture or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture, and for the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by the City Council and is of no affiliation with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, as well as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance, are used by the commission to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new developments. Bidders from the visibility from the public right of way, including streets, lanes, sidewalks within the historic, with the Savannah local historic and conservation districts. The commission cannot consider certain criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance items, such as the land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangements of structures are not within the commission's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. Please turn off all cell phones. Let's start with members. Signposting. The members of the commission receive an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the properties. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were all projects properly posted? Any? Okay. Hearing no, hearing nothing being improperly posted, we will go on to the consent agenda. Consent agenda. These are items that have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Are there any members of the public or commissioners who wish to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Okay, hearing none, we will go ahead and vote on the consent agenda.
Kathy Levina, I move that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Katrina Horning, I second.
Okay, let's take a vote. So Scott.
Scott Kratzer, I approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Jeff Natrika, I also approve. And so passed. Is there... Okay, adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda of April 23rd?
Pam Miller, I move that we adopt the agenda as written.
Katrina Horning, I second.
Okay, let's take a vote. We'll start with Kathy.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Brian was approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Scott Kratzer, approve.
Okay, now let's go through the approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes of the previous meeting? Okay, not hearing any, I will ask for a motion.
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to adopt the minutes of the previous meeting.
Kathy Levina, I second.
Okay, let's take a vote. We'll start with Scott.
Scott Kratzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Okay, let's see here. Do we have anything to be removed? Nothing to be removed. Nothing from the continued agenda. We have these items have been continued, deferred to the next meeting or date certain, or that staff has determined incomplete at this time. Can I get a motion on this one continued item?
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to approve the, a continued agenda.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Okay, let's get a vote. We'll start with Scott.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Let's see here. Regular agenda, request for extension. Okay, now we will start with the regular agenda. Applications that are submitted monthly appear on the regular agenda in the following order by district. Victorian, Kyler Brownsville District, Streetcar District, Conservation Districts. Let's begin the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with their recommendation. The petition will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. The commission asks that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the commission. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The commission will then go into commission discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairman. We will structure commission discussion by calling on each board member for two rounds of 2 minutes, comments or less. Board members are not required to comment. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise your hand feature. I will be notified and I will call you by your name. You will submit your name for the record and then you may comment. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. All right, let's see here. We will start with we're going to start with the petition of Braden Scully, 25-001124-COA, 114 West Duffy Street, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant is requesting approval to construct an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property located at 114 West Duffy Street. The request also includes variance recommendation requests from the Historic Preservation Commission to the City of Savannah's Zoning Board of Appeals. Those requests include a zero lot line set, side yard setback on the western property line where the minimum is 3 feet. So you'll see that right here. A non-combustible staircase within the side yard setback on the eastern property line. And then exceeding the 40% rule for ADU footprints at 47%, which is 478 square feet due to the small square footage of the row house footprint, which is 1,010 square feet. And then lot coverage that it exceeds the 60% maximum by 1%. So just for a little context here, 114 West Duffy Street was built in 1889, clearly a contributing resource. It is the middle unit of three row houses. So we're looking right at this one. The majority of houses on this block of West Duffy Street are contributing resources, many built within the same time period. The property backs up to West Park Lane, where the accessory dwelling unit will be constructed. The Sanborn maps from 1898 through 1966 show how there were several outbuildings along both sides of West Park Lane. So this is what was on this property in particular, but you can see how, you know, over time there was a variety of different structures there. By 1953, there was a garage built to the property lines here. It is not historically uncommon to see outbuildings taking up the entire space of a lot in this area. The lot sizes are narrow, and in the case of 114 West Duffy, in the center of a set of row houses, which were built up to the side yard property lines. So just to kind of walk through the plans. This is just your typical garage on the first level, living space upstairs, roof plan, just our elevation drawing. So this is what would be seen from the lane. and the side elevations, this is the staircase. So that would be slightly within that setback on that side. The other side setback. So this is in relation to the historic house, just showing the heights and that this is indeed shorter. And just some other perspectives. This is a design on, it's on Bolton Street that was recently constructed. Similar design here. It's not connected to the historic house, but just to show an example of what it looks like. So overall, with regard to the standards, staff found most of them were met, but there was just some minor notices, which was for the spacing between the railings, it needs to be 4 inches on center, and even though these are going the opposite direction as many of them, we're still just wanting to get the confirmation that they're 4 inches on center. And then the other one is the overhang of the eaves on accessory buildings shall overhang at least 8 inches. So we just need to ensure that is the case and to have that shown on the drawings. So with regard to the variance recommendation request, you know, this is analyzed by our staff as it relates to the design standards and will be a recommendation made from you all to the ZBA. So the special conditions for this deals with the lot size. There are many existing accessory structures on the lane. There are not many existing accessory structures on the lane at present of which to compare, apart from the one contributing accessory building two doors down, which takes up the full lot. You can kind of see that here. What is peculiar to the land in this case is the fact that it is the center unit of three connected row houses, which had been built to the side property lines in 1889. And the splitting of the three units creates a situation of narrow lots per unit. The lot size is not due to actions of the applicant. The proposed ADU would be 478 square feet, which is well below the 700 square foot maximum. Due to the narrow lot size, it brings it to 47% of the footprint of the principal building. The applicant notes that to build small enough to fit within the literal interpretation of the ordinance, the structure would not be functional as an ADU. Staff recommends that the applicant consider, though, whether it's possible to design the ADU to be off the property line, even if that's 1 foot or 2 feet, if the three foot minimum cannot be met. This was something that our executive director had discussed with us. So we were just following suit with what goes next to the ZBA for that condition. Due to the lot configuration, staff finds these are the minimum requests necessary to make possible the reasonable use of an ADU on the site. The applicant will be installing fire-rated walls and non-combustible exterior stairs. And then special privilege would not be granted, as other property owners would have the same right to apply for the same variances if they needed them and chose to construct ADUs on their properties. So with that, get us up to the staff recommendation, which is approve the request to construct an ADU on the property at 114 West Duffy Street with the following conditions. To be reviewed by staff before submitting final drawings for permits because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. So that would be ensure there's no more than 4 foot spacing between the steel cables on the staircase and ensure that eaves and rakes on the accessory building overhang at least 8 inches and recommend that the Historic Preservation Commission recommend approval to the City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals for the variance recommendation request with the following condition, because the variance criteria from a design perspective are otherwise met, which is consider design options that would mitigate the need for building up to the zero lot line. Thank you, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Do you have any questions for staff?
Kathy LeBun, I've got one question. Would you consider these casement windows?
Yes, I believe they are casement windows.
So according to the ordinance, casement windows shall have light divisions. Can you explain that?
I'm sure that's something that the applicant could look into. I think this was something that was previously approved, which may be why it was not noted at that time, but I think they could probably make that change.
Okay.
I just have a question, please, Pam Miller. So the staircase is not considered part of the setback?
The staircase would be built within that 3-foot setback. It's clearly not.
Eliminates that setback. It's not 3 feet, then the staircase.
Yeah, so, well, here's the, we can go back to the site plan. And this is something the applicant may be able to further clarify.
Okay.
But again, this is something that they had done that went on East Bolton Street, and I think this is a fire code situation here that's outside of our.
Again, I think it's a uniqueness of being centered between what was a triplex apartment at one point.
Yeah.
A little different than being on an end unit or a standalone. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Would the petitioner please step forward and state your name for the records?
Braden Scaly, thanks to staff for working with me on this project, and thanks to the board for looking at this project today. So I'm happy to work with staff on the recommendations. The 4-inch railing spacing is code, so that's just something I need to clarify on the drawings. The overhangs as well, we've got on the, let me go to this elevation. Yeah, so I've got them on the north and the south sides. I can just clarify that detail as well. There'll be a minimum of 8 inches. But on the east and west, similar to this old, similar to this guy down on the right hand corner, it's got a very similar condition where it's at least, I mean, there's probably about just under a foot of overhang. And then on the, you can see on the east, the rake condition, there's only, you know, the width of that, that trim board piece. So that area is at, you know, it's very in keeping with the kind of aesthetic of that, that alley, that lane. But that's where that kind of came from. And then in terms of the, in terms of the side yard setback, I mean, I think Caitlin explained it pretty well, but essentially being, you know, sandwiched in between two other units, I mean, presents a hardship, and the, and really what's dictating the whole thing is how we get standard garage doors in. And so when you do that, if we look at this other sheet, a floor plan, you can see where, like, you know, it's pretty tight in terms of, and now we, there is movement in it. I just think it's starting to get to the point where we're probably going to need steel or something to kind of mitigate that thin, the kind of the width that we need. So, but again, happy to work with staff on this one and happy to take some questions.
Okay. Are there any questions from members of the board?
Scott Krotzer, I have a question. Besides internalizing the stairwell, what else can be done to pull it off the zero lot lines? Is that what you are trying to work with in your suggestion?
Well, I mean, there's some width that we can take out of the width of the building, I think. I mean, it's not going to be 2 feet, but, you know, we are required by zoning ordinance. We need two parking spaces, and essentially to get that, the only way to do that is obviously give us two parking spaces, but an 8-0 standard size width garage door, is kind of what we've come up with, and having that 3-foot side, the stair on the interior side setback, being non-combustible, allows us to kind of build from that point onward, and that's really where it lands. So, I mean, I think we can work with staff, but it's a little tricky being sandwiched in between two other units.
Katrina Hornung, has there been any communication with either of the neighbors? Are they intending to build anything on either of those lots to the east and west?
So the owner has been in contact with the neighbor to the west. I believe they've been talking back and forth, and it sounds like both are interested in doing carriage houses, so there might be in the future something that turns up. But I would say, though, you know, in comparison to the other west property, that's a 30 foot wide property. This is 23. And so if you put that same building footprint inside, it's not going to be impeding on those side interior setbacks. And so again, it's a tricky one, but this is kind of where it's landed.
And your plan after this is go to the ZBA for the variance?
That's correct.
Is that scheduled already?
Yes.
Okay. Have you got any preliminary input from them?
No, I have not. I've been in contact with John Agnost over there at Agnost, sorry. But he hasn't made any major comments or anything like that. So.
Okay. Are there any other?
Mm-hmm. May I just clarify something? Did you just say the other two properties to either side, their lot width was 30 feet?
Yeah. So the one to the west is 30. The one to the east is 27. So in any case, ours is 23.
So let me ask you a hypothetical question, because first of all, I'm not an architect. I'm not a developer. So I'm coming strictly from a layman's perspective. Hypothetically, I've just bought one of the properties next door, the 27 foot. I need you to build the same thing. Can you?
Anything's possible.
So that's my biggest concern, is somebody not being able to do that because you're already at the zero setback. You'd be butted right up against them. And what would that be like for your client, who now all of a sudden there's a staircase?
With 27 feet, I mean, you've got four extra feet. So we've just gained four extra feet on that west hand side. So I think, you know, that's easily doable. And we've just, that project that we just showed, we completed that one as well. And so we had to go for a side interior setback as well. And that's why we had the stair on the side as well, which is that kind of non-combustible steel.
So understanding the size of the lot, I'm okay with the variance for exceeding that percentage. But is there a way to do, and just again, not being an architect, yeah, is there a way to do something a little more narrow and a little longer to accomplish the same goal?
Because
there seems to be a lot more yard or whatever between the main property and the ADU. Is that a possibility?
Yeah. I mean, this block tends to be a little deeper than normal, but again, it's dictated by the width of the garage door. And if we go any smaller than an 8, I mean, you can't even get a regular size vehicle in that. And so, and what I mean by dictated by the width is truly there's 8 inches, and then we've got about 6 inches for structure in between. And then what you're left on the outside is really what is going to allow us to either shrink or make that work. But,
and 2-car parking is required?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Because there's 2 dwellings essentially. So there's obviously one in the main house, and then we're proposing.
Okay. So the main house, that's their parking.
Yes.
Well, because they're correct on a lane. All right. I got you.
Correct.
Kathy Labina, my question is that the ordinance states that an ADU shall be designed in a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling. We've seen this design before. It's sort of a replica of a previously built ADU for a different house. And this is a contributing building in the district. And so my question to you is, how have you related this design to the Italianate contributing building that it is directly relates to? I don't see any Italianate details. Maybe you can
So what we've done, let me, my photos of the front. Sorry, let me just skip a couple of pages. Right, so my first comment would be, you know, historical replication is you know, not I don't believe is appropriate. I would say in terms of like the siding, with, you know, the siding is the same direction. We've got windows that match the same proportions on the original home. Not on the back, sorry, but the back's kind of has a different proportion to the front, but the main roof, as you can see in this middle image, is also a hip of sorts. I mean, it's got a flat piece on top, but you know, that roof line is kind of mimicking and doing the same thing on that, on the lane side. And then also, you know, I mean, obviously we're trying to tie this building in with what's existing on the lot, but also what's on the lane. And again, we kind of go back to this only the kind of lone soldier that's really the only carriage house that's left on the lane. And so, trying to blend, you know, the two, kind of structures that are left over, as well as, designing it in kind of today's, aesthetic.
So, I stated previously that the casing window needed to be divided. I mean, is that something that you would be willing to do?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's in previous projects we haven't necessarily had to do that. I think it would look a little odd aesthetically, only because it's so, you know, the building's quite clean and you know, proportional, but has some kind of cleaner details to it. But I would say we're open to working with staff on that.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Board members?
Courtney Bonnie. Yes, I had a question. Regarding the parking situation, have you discussed with staff at all the option of getting a variance on the parking versus seeking three other variances that affect your neighbors, right? I mean, it seems like a better solution to have one spot and be able to have this meet the requirements than, you know, because that kind of waterfalls and all of a sudden these other variances disappear. You don't need them anymore.
Right. To that, I would say there are two parking spaces on the lot currently. I mean, it's just dirt, and trying to convince a client to do that would be, it's a little difficult, but I would say in terms of like the zoning and the kind of, you know, historic side of it, we would, prefer to stick with the two. I think there is some movement in the overall building, some meaning maybe a foot, but, you know, again, it kind of goes back to that, you know, this is a hardship being that we're sandwiched between two other main kind of contributing structures. So, yeah, that's what I'd say about that.
So you haven't.
We have not discussed that, no.
Okay. Is that something you'd be willing to explore with staff?
Yes, I'll be open to it. But again, there's two parking spaces, that are currently there right now. And I think that's the, you know, part of the zoning ordinance that requires us to have these two. Obviously, if we went for a variance and got the one, probably supersede the rest of it. But we're open to talking with staff.
Are there any other questions from any of the board members? Okay, now let's move on to the public. I have one speaker card from Ellie Isaacs from Historic Savannah Foundation.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC is supportive of this petition for a new ADU in this location, and we hope that adjacent neighbors follow suit since housing is so needed in Savannah. We appreciate that the design does not convey a false sense of historicism and its modernity, however, is complementary in scale and proportions of historic lane dwellings. However, we are confused regarding the staff recommendation to ZBA. Considering they're recommending an approval, but how can a recommendation for approval be given with the condition that the design options be explored to mitigate for the need for the building to have a zero lot line, because that would undoubtedly affect the entire design for the building that was then just recommended for approval. So if staff could provide clarity on that, that would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Anyone else? I think that's the only card I've got. At this point, we will see if anybody on the board, do you have any questions of staff? All right. At this point, we'll close the,
If you would like, I can address that. Yes. I would first say this is just merely a recommendation, and what you all recommend today doesn't necessarily affect, it may or may not affect what the ZBA says. So it's, you know, I think our executive director was just of the mindset that the zero lot lines have not really been getting approved, and that we, in that mindset, should not support an outright approval. If a design can be changed to mitigate it slightly, which also not an architect, so I'm not going to say it can or can't. That's up to the architect to look into. So that was where the thinking came from on that.
So my question at this point would be, could we make a recommendation if we do this that the DBA not consider that as there is a possibility, or leave that open for later decision based on the possibility of them doing something about that? I'm feeling a little.
I think it would depend, like, what the ZBA said. They would have to come back to us if they did have to change the design, if they didn't approve that zero lot line.
So if they approve the zero lot line, because they haven't maybe historically, but they might tomorrow
right.
or next week.
I don't know that it's on tomorrow's agenda.
Or whatever.
Whenever it comes
next.
Next
month,
yeah.
Whenever. If they just happen to have one of those days where they approve it, then whatever, then we have no recourse to come back and do anything at that point, correct?
Right, because it's only a recommendation that HPC makes, so there's no decision.
Right, but our recommendation mm-hmm. should carry some weight, or why are we here?
Mm-hmm. So.
Right?
If our executive director was available, I would ask her to come speak on this a little further, but I don't.
Yeah. I mean,
her,
I want to be fair to the developer and all of that. I just don't want there to be a conflict between, you know, our instructions and what we would normally maybe look at. Thank you.
Okay. At this time, we will enter into a commission discussion. No further comment will be accepted. We will have each commissioner will have two opportunities to comment. We'll go ahead and start with Scott.
Scott Krotzer, I'm confused then. Shouldn't it go back, or shouldn't it be continued? That's how I'm feeling about it. I understand the design needs, but I also understand fire. And so I really think that there's a reason we have setbacks, and there's a reason that we have lot coverages. And if we just continue to approve these because of the applicant's need, which I understand design for sure, but then we're just going to have a row of these all backed up to one another and looking in each other's windows or something weird. So I didn't know if there was also firewalls on each side, or just the one side with no windows. I really don't have that much to say about design, but I agree with Kathy, maybe a little more reference to the design of the original building. Of course, not copied, but even division of lights would be good.
Katrina Hornung, I'm just looking at this, trying to look at this, you know, from the point of someone differently abled or in a wheelchair. Certainly they can't go through the front because there's stairs there. And if neighbors built fences on both sides, then, you know, you'd have to, if there was someone in the garage, you'd have to take this car out in order for someone who was in a wheelchair to get through to the garage, to get into the backyard. It just feels like there needs to be a dedicated setback on the other side in order to kind of achieve equality.
Courtney Bonney, again, just reiterating, I think there needs to be more exploration of alternative variances or redrawing that shows at least a foot and a half, like some attempt to pull this off and meet some requirements. Because even if this was pulled a foot and a half back, I think it would eliminate, you know, the 47% and 61 would immediately come into compliance. And, you know, you wouldn't be having to seek so many accommodations. I think you also would maybe be able to embed this staircase within the structure so you're not impeding on the other side. So I think there's just a little bit more exploration on the design side about alternatives and how you could work with the city and the ordinance to have the least impact on, you know, the neighbors to the left and right. So I think this might be one that needs just a little bit more consideration and maybe some additional markups before moving forward.
Brian Woods, I agree with the previous three board members. I think this is something I'm leaning more towards continuing the petition on because, you know, just more things need to be explored because it seems like there are going to be some issues with accessibility and, yeah, the variance is going to be an issue as well since they haven't approved them in the past. I mean, it seems like it would be less trouble for all parties involved, really, if we, you know, get some other ideas floating around and come back to it. So, yeah.
Pam Miller. So my question kind of, I guess, to be to everybody, to staff and also the petitioner is if we were to deny this today versus continue it today, would that denial have the effect of getting the information back to the, as far as the variances go? Or would we, if we continued it today, would there be a way to also make sure that that's known that we're continuing it because of that setback?
I think the continuation, if the applicant were amenable to the continuance, would be the way to go with those conditions spelled out for what you want to see when they come back.
Well, rather than a way to let them know that we're doing that specifically for that, because that setback, I think, is what's got everybody that zero setback. I think that's, in my mind, what people are a little concerned about. So rather, so if there is a possibility of designing that in a different way to not have that, and like Courtney says, that then meets your percentage better, it'd be less requests, less things to do, is that, could we do that and make that known so that they just don't go ahead and approve the zero, which is our intent for whatever we're doing, denying or continuing today?
Well, I think since it's, as far as I know, and Edward can correct me if I'm wrong, this is not on the agenda for tomorrow, which means there would still be time for this to come back to you all before ZBA, regardless.
Edward, do you agree with that?
I can, let's check it out. Yeah.
So if you're all amenable to working with a, you know, with them to fix this.
Sorry, if I could, this is Edward Morrow. I would agree that actually, even though there was not a request for the recommendation, it would be appropriate at this time to, you know, express some, I guess, some expectations about what you would like to see with regard to appropriateness. And those notes will absolutely be forwarded for the board's full consideration as they look at the petition.
Is the petitioner amenable to that?
Braden Scaly, yes, I'm happy to, I mean, to everyone's point, you know, moving this whole side setback is probably the big issue. If we, look at redesigning that, that's probably going to fix all the kind of variances and all that stuff that we've gone for. So, yeah, that side interior setback will look to kind of.
So the answer is yes, you are amenable?
Yeah. But I'm going to redesign it, which means we have to come back here. So.
Yeah, I know it does, and I'm sorry for that. I think we'd rather do that and help you out than the gym.
Sure. Absolutely.
Kathy
Ledvina, I agree with the design. A design option would be beneficial. I also respect modern design, and I think you can create a nice modern design, but respect the historic architecture of the main building that this ADU directly relates to, whether it's casings around the window or a light division in the casement window, which is required. I don't expect a replica of the main house, but just maybe some respect
Okay, at this time I'd like to go ahead and call for a motion. Kathy. I'd like to call for a motion if somebody would like to.
And I would just like to note if you do have a continuance to put a date certain in for that continuation. May 20th would be the next, yeah.
Courtney Bonney, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission continue the petition of Braden Scaley 25-001124-COA until the May 28th meeting to explore design options to reduce the setback on one of the sides of the ADU.
Katrina Horning, I second.
Kathy Levine, I'd like to add a condition to that motion.
Please do.
I would like to ask that the design be more representative of a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling as stated in the ordinance.
Also, aren't we making a recommendation that the DBA looks at this with the idea that they're coming back with a redesign? Is the continuance, isn't that what?
I mean, this is coming back to you all before ZBA anyway.
Don't need to do that.
I don't.
I apologize for stepping in on this, but we're trying to get this clean.
Essentially, what I've taken from the comments I've heard is, sorry, Edward Morrow, that there should be a increase of the setback on at least one side. And I will attempt to kind of limit my remarks to the board to those that are directly related to the requests of them. And so if the side setback is the only request that we receive, that is one thing. It is also a provision of Section 874 about the style. It does state that the style should be consistent, and we have heard requests about variation of style, so that's something that we will also consider. But I'll take your notes from your recommendation today related to the request that we receive on the application, and I'll make sure they're conveyed to the board.
Courtney, do you accept or reject Kathy's addition to your motion?
I accept.
Okay, great. Having a motion made and accepted. Actually, I need a second on the addition.
Katrina Hornung, I second the motion.
Having a motion proposed and accepted, we'll go ahead and go to vote. Let's start with Scott.
Scott Krotzer, I approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Libana, approve.
Jeff Gentrica, approve. Great. So this will be delayed until the 5/28 meeting. Let's go to the next item on our agenda. Petition of Cook Architecture, Scott Cook, 25-001122COA, 512 East Anderson Street.
Thank you, Jonathan Mellon. So as we discussed briefly during the pre-meeting, the proposal is to address accessibility to the Anderson School, which was constructed in 1896. And I'm sure we all know the building very well. It has notable classical and colonial revival style influences. It has been used by the Savannah College of Art and Design for a number of years. You probably may think this is one lot, but it's actually, and I'm going to get into why there's a special exception request and a variance recommendation request. These are actually two separate lots. There is a East Henry Lane that runs through the site, which is, again, why they need a special exception from a request for you all to vote on the special exception and also to make a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals. So, again, siting question, you all know it, I'm sure. I'll show you some photos. Fronting on East Anderson Street, bounded also by Habersham Street to the west, Price Street to the east, and then East Henry Street to the north. This is the large gravel parking lot that is used by students. So here's the elevation in question. This is the rear elevation. Again, the original building from 1896 here, contributing building. There is a circa 1980s one-story non-contributing addition. And then here's this surface parking lot, which is on a separate lot. And then the lane is actually right here, bisecting this site. And so we had a number of meetings with the project architect, who's here today, who will walk you through this. They had done, and I'll let him explain this, they'd done a really careful study of how to provide accessibility to the building with preserving as much historic fabric as possible. It was not able to be done on the interior, which is often the case with these schools or courthouse buildings, other kind of public buildings. I personally have worked on a number of them with public libraries, where it's the same issue, where it's very hard sometimes to do accessibility within the buildings because just the way they were designed with grand staircases, et cetera. So what's being proposed is a very modestly scaled rear addition, again, on the secondary elevation. It would be reversible. It would not compete architecturally with the 1896 building. So you probably noted when you reviewed the design, it's very understated and simple. It's not trying to look like it was built in 1896 with the building or it was added in the 1920s, which staff feels is appropriate and is in keeping with the Secretary of Interior standard. So again, I'm just going to walk you through this pretty quickly before I turn you over to Scott. Let me zoom in here a minute. So again, this is the school in question. This is the lane. This is the non-contributing one-story circa 1980s addition. This little box here is where they're proposing to provide the accessibility, which will basically be a very small one-story lobby space and then an elevator to provide access. But again, as you can see, because the lane is right here, they can't meet a rear yard setback. And they also have an issue with the footprint that is allowed in this zoning district. So, again, minimal demolition or removal here. We talked about this with the project architect. Again, they really tried to keep this to the bare minimum. And then the proposed addition. This is the historic building. This is the non-contributing addition. This is the new addition, which again will be clearly differentiated from old from new, as the Secretary of Interior Standards mandate. So in terms of the two, I want to go back items. We've had a lot of discussions today already, I know, about variances. The applicant is requesting a special exception. In the TN1 zoning district, the non-residential building footprint, the maximum allowed is 2,500 square feet. The existing building is 12,005 square feet. So it's obviously non-conforming as it is. With the proposed addition, it would be 12,255 square feet. So they've kept this addition as small as they can, but they still need a special exception that they're requesting from you all. And then they are also requesting from you all a variance recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals, the ZBA, from the following standard. TN1, building setbacks for blocks with contributing structures, rear yard 30 feet. This would, what they're asking for is a rear yard setback of 12 feet, 1.5 inches. As I noted, the existing two-story historic 1896 building and the one-story circa 1980s addition do not meet the required rear yard setback as is. And as you can see here, they're not proposing to actually to come out as far as the 1980s addition. They're just going to tuck it in here, right here. So again, staff felt this was very reasonable. And so in terms of our recommendation, we are recommending approval for the rear addition for the property as requested, because it's visually compatible and particularly notable, meets the Secretary of the Interior standards. This is exactly how they would recommend approaching this. And we are also recommending approval of the one special exception to allow for a footprint increase in the footprint by 250 square feet, which would again bring it to 12,255 Again, what's only allowed is 2,500. The existing building does not meet that, obviously. And thirdly, a recommendation to the ZBA for one variance. This is for the rear yard setback to allow for a rear yard setback of 12 feet, 1.5 inches, where a 30-foot setback is required. I would again note that neither the existing his contributing building or the addition meet that setback. So basically, to meet that setback, you couldn't meet that setback with any addition that you're proposing on this site. And with that, happy to answer any questions or turn it over to the project architect.
Anybody on the board have questions for the staff? Okay, hearing none, let's hear from the petitioner, please. Please identify yourself before speaking.
Hi, I'm Scott Cook with Cook Architecture. I just want to thank the staff for a really thorough review of the drawings and the design. And we completely agree with the recommendations, of course, of staff. You know, throughout this project, we were really trying to just really minimally impact the historic building, the 1896 building. We think that that achieved it by doing the addition where we did it and the location that we did it, being kind of within this inside corner between the 1980s addition and the 1896 building. It allows us to actually arrive into the building, get into the elevator, and then come in through on a stair landing. So we'll have almost no impact to the interior of the building. A lot of historic maple flooring, trim, wainscot. It seemed like the most sensible way and really just the best location to put this new service function and provide accessibility for students and faculty. Happy to answer any questions that you all have.
Scott Krautzer, I have a question. Are you going to cut store the windows somewhere for that removal process?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, you know, what we're going to store not only the windows, but also probably the stone lintels and keep those to see if we can salvage those as well. One thing to note, and I don't want to steal Ellie's fire, but she contacted me yesterday, so HSF will come up and probably say something. But you can kind of see here where I was actually calling out to remove this middle window, and we don't really need to. It's just we're building the elevator shaft right up against it, and so I was calling out to remove it, but instead we might put a film or something over the window, retain that window, keep it there, and so we don't even have to remove that window at all. So just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. And what about the two material connections? Will there be any degradation of the brick because of the concrete or?
So let me get to a section for you, Scott. So what we're actually proposing is we are putting a 1 foot gap in between the elevator shaft and the building. So there's only going to be like 2 or 3 points where this addition even touches the historic building, so that it's completely reversible and it'll be just a really minimal impact.
Thank you. Yep.
Do board members have any questions of the petitioner? Okay, hearing none, let's go ahead and go to a public comment. We've got two speaker cards. Let's start with Ellie Isaacs from Historic Savannah Foundation.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC is supportive of this petition, special exception, and variance to add an elevator to the rear facade of SCAD's Garvin Hall. The elevator addition is sensitive, utilizing existing openings and sitting below the cornice line. As Scott said, however, we would like to add the condition to the approval, that being that window on the first floor is retained in place and with a film added to the glass, and that the remaining windows and sills be sensitively salvaged upon removal. And like Scott said, we already talked to him about that, and he was amenable. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Next petition commenter is Josh Yellen.
I will stand up, Josh Yellen, to say I don't need to give any comment on this item. Thank you all for your consideration. We were just concerned when people see variances and special exceptions that it might be misinterpreted. But as you all can see, and as was presented, this was clearly the minimum request that was necessary to bring the accessibility to the project. So thank you all.
Thank you. At this time, we will go ahead and close public comment. We'll start with the I guess we'll start with Scott for comments.
I don't have a comment really, other than maybe abandoning the lane at some point so this isn't a problem. I don't know. That's where all the variance is coming from, right? With the setbacks. It's built on a lane that is probably never going to be a lane.
Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Courtney Bonney, no comment.
Brian Woods, no comment.
Pam Miller, I agree with staff recommendations.
Kathy Levine, I agree with staff, and I appreciate the salvaging of the historic materials.
Excellent. At this point, I'd like to call for a motion.
Katrina Hornung, I will. Thank you for keeping that. Give me 1 second. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Scott Cook 25-001122-COA 412 East Anderson with the following conditions: that the materials that are salvageable be salvaged and kept, and that the untouched window remain in place and a protective film applied, as well as approving a special exemption and recommending approval to the ZBA. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
And Miller, I second that motion.
Great. Having a motion properly offered and seconded, I would like to go ahead and get a vote, and we'll start with Kathy.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Scott Crosser, approve.
Jeff Ventrica, approve. Motion carries. We will go on to agenda item 15, which is the petition of 1201 Abercorn LLC, Brianna Paxton, 25-001662 COA, 1108 Abercorn Street, new construction.
Afternoon, this is Kelly Mitchell. Again, the applicant is requesting approval of new construction small part 1 and 2 for a 2.5-story structure at 1108 Abercorn Street. As discussed during the pre-meeting, this application requires multiple variances. The applicant has applied to the ZBA and will be heard tomorrow at the April meeting. The variances include the side setback that ranges from about 1 foot 6 inches to 2 feet 9 inches on the southern property line. The minimum in this area is 3 feet. To have a lot coverage at 63%, the maximum is 60%. To exceed the 40% rule for the footprint, for the ADU for the primary structure at 100%, and to exceed the 700 square foot maximum, and for a parking variance. If the variances are not approved tomorrow, and if the design has to be changed due to the ZBA's ruling, the project will have to come back for review. And also, as previously mentioned during the pre-meeting, the applicant did not request a variance recommendation, so the standards for the recommendation were not included in the staff report and will not be discussed during the presentation. The proposed building will be located behind this historic building. The building will be on its own lot and will be abutting oriented towards Abercorn Street. And then just a quick note, this is an active lane right here as well. So staff surveyed the media area of this project to determine if a building of this size could be appropriate in this case. As a note, every property highlighted as green, it's a 2.5-story building, everything in orange is a 2-story building, and everything in blue, mainly these three, are 2-story buildings with commercial on the first floor and residential above. And this is seen on these pictures. The proposed building, again, will be about 2.5 stories in height. That reads as commercial on the first floor with residential above. Given the immediate context, which includes buildings of varying heights with styles and setback, staff finds the proposed size and mass as well as the building's placement on the lot to be visually compatible. While the exact form that's being proposed is not seen in the immediate area, staff finds that it is a more contemporary example of a 2.5-story building that's seen throughout this area. Staff also believes that since it reads as commercial on the first floor as well as a flat roof, these examples are seen in the immediate area and are visually compatible as well. Overall, the staff finds that the structure does meet the standards. There are a couple of things of note, however.
When reviewing the floor to floor heights, staff applied the standards for the residential units and not for the other building types, even though the property reads as commercial on the first floor. That's because the entirety of the building will be residential and there's no commercial within the structure itself. In either case, however, it will meet the floor to floor heights. So after a similar approach with looking at the window transparency, per the ordinance, the transparency standard is 30% on the ground floor for residential facades, 70% for retail, and 50% for non-residential. So staff applied the 30% rule because this is all residential. Staff did have concerns about this elevation abutting, facing the neighboring properties. Clearly does not meet the 30% rule. Staff is unclear if it will be visible from the street, however, because as previously mentioned, there is a staircase that is coming onto the property from the neighboring building. So it's unclear on the site plan how close this elevation will be to that staircase and whether or not any of this elevation will be visible. So the applicant will need to confirm if any of this is visible and will need to meet the 30% transparency if it is from Abercorn. Also of note, it says awning right here doesn't overall meet the standards, but it is encroaching the public right of way, so they will need an encroachment permit for that. Staff also included condition for the applicant to provide material information for the rear door, rear decking, for the gutter and downspout, for exterior lighting. This was all provided to staff yesterday. Staff finds the materials do meet the standards. There are other details that also need to be confirmed to include the height of this handrail, and whether or not the double hung windows are inset the minimum 3 inches that are required per the standards. So with that, staff recommends approval of the new construction small parts 1 and 2 for a 2.5-story structure at 1108 Abercorn with the conditions that are seen on the screen. Does the commission have any questions?
Yes. What is the current zoning of this property?
Acorn?
What is the current zoning of this property?
TN1.
TN1. And what is the future land use map indicated as?
That I'm not sure. What do you know, Edward? Or he's looking that up currently. What? Traditional neighborhood.
Thank you.
Questions, yes. For staff? I'm sorry. Can you go back to your diagram of the neighborhood?
Yes, this. Where are the 3-story buildings in this?
So there are several 2.5 there that are larger. So you have, these are the green ones. It's these 3 right here.
2.5 Are there any 3-story?
Not that I saw. This building right here is kind of difficult to see in this photo. So this one is probably the closest to a full 3-story.
With an mansard roof?
Yeah. So it may be considered, some may consider it 3 stories, but staff considered it 2.5.
Where is that one?
That one. So the property in question is right here.
Correct.
I believe, if I remember right, it's maybe one of these 3. Well, that, I may have classified it as 2. So I believe it's one of these. And then it's black.
All right. Thank you. And one more question. The tile, is an approved exterior material on storefronts. This is being considered as residential, correct?
That's a residential use, but we did apply the storefront standards to that one front portion.
And so what about the tile on the residential, the residential 3-story?
So I didn't see that either approved or denied in this case.
Either approved nor denied.
So in this case, the board can consider it because it's kind of a different material. And staff considered it appropriate in this case because it's an absent material.
Because so it's been approved on the commercial front?
No, since it's absent. So right here, so it's not the primary material.
Correct.
If the entire building were this tile, we would say no, it's not appropriate. But since it's not the primary.
Because it's an accent, you're saying that it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a height limitation on this area, on this lot?
So it's average height of block up to 40 feet. Also worth noting is this parapet does not count towards overall height.
So it's within the height limits?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Are there any other questions, board members?
Scott Krotzer. So the other stairwell, did staff consider what would be required in removing that other stairwell that's encroaching when it do quite a bit of damage to the other building to have to internalize that?
Yeah, so staff not consider that because that's not part of this application. That would be something that maybe development services can consider, but staff not look at that as part of the project.
Okay, any other questions of board members? I hear none. Let's hear from the petitioner.
Kelly, do you know where my slides are? I have also slides in addition to that.
I only saw that one.
Okay. Can we double check? Sorry, my slides are missing. Check. It's on the thumb drive.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Yes, of
back
course.
To staff.
Yeah.
Regarding the ZBA, they're not asking for an opinion. However, knowing that they're going, is the HPC allowed to give an opinion? Can we yay or nay? And bring those concerns to the ZBA if there are any?
Always. So with regard, Edward Morrow, with regard to things that are within standards under that board's purview, staff is always willing to offer guidance from a board that is also, you know, acting in an associated capacity. I think that's always appropriate. I'm happy to take your concerns back.
Thank you.
Specifically related to standards under that board's purview.
Thank you.
My name is Brianna Paxton. I'm here on behalf of an LLC that owns this property entitled 1201 Abercorn LLC. Let's see if I can bring up my slides and talk at the same time. That group of property owners, if you recognize that address, recently purchased and has already started rehabilitating the 1201 Abercorn Church, which is around the corner from this. Further south on the corner of Abercorn and Duffy, that exterior renovation is completed and they are working on securing a tenant for the inside of that location. This little lot came with that transaction. And I will note all of those owners are local. They live within a 5-minute walking distance from this site. So many other folks might have seen this tiny little lot and decided it wasn't worth the trouble. But this group has really put in a lot of thought to think through how might we build on this lot? What should go in this lot that would benefit the neighborhood? So I'm going to run through kind of our thought process and the months of pre-development that we have been going through to bring this forward to you today. So to orient you to the lot, Kelly did a great job looking at other structures in the area. This is a small lot right behind 201 and 203 East Park Avenue. As you can see in the picture, the Sanborn map on the right, there previously were attached dwellings here facing Abercorn. And at one point in time, all four corners of this East Park Lane and Abercorn had zero lot line buildings. So it used to be much denser property. The middle is a satellite photo. You can see the Cuban Window Cafe is probably a recognizable landmark that you guys might know that's just to the south of us across the lane. This view on the left is the lot straight on from Abercorn. Note the encroaching stairs. Second view is standing from in the lane. There are several peculiarities with this lot, the stairs being one of them. The other thing to note is the lot itself is not straight. So you might notice on the plans, the building isn't quite straight, and the architect intends to align the building on the Abercorn front to match the contributing building to the north. So that ends up being a little bit wonky and means that we're dipping into that 3-foot setback with ZBA. I wanted to also point out one other reason why other developers might have run from this is a known flood spot. And we were kind of shocked to see this is a photo from the newspaper from one of those storms last summer. And that's the neighboring building to the north, and the minivan flooded out right in front of our lot. So we've had lots of discussion with Mr. Tom McDonald, who's the floodplain manager for the city of Savannah, because one of our questions was, is this lot even buildable? And if we need to build it up, how high do we need to build? And through discussion with him regarding the base flood elevation in the 100-year floodplain that this is in, he said we need to build 4 feet off the grade, and it must be a crawl space foundation to allow for water to be absorbed underneath it. So hopefully that illustrates for you, Mr. Krauser, how we can build here. So one of the reasons that we're before you today and not in front of ZBA first is because the variances that we are requesting at ZBA really have no bearing on the exterior appearance and material choices for this project. So some of the things that we're up against is this lot is substandard in size. It's only 1,620 square feet, and the minimum required for TN1 is 2,100. As I mentioned, the base flood elevation concerns meant that a commercial use on this property was out, because how would you put an ADA ramp on an already too small property? So that really led us, from a use standpoint, that single family use was the only allowed use per the zoning on this property. And that comes with one required parking space. So those are some considerations that we are, you know, stuck between all these hard corners. One other thing I wanted to mention, the reason we are not asking for a variance recommendation is that portion of the ordinance is in relation to properties that are located outside of a local historic district. And Ms. Ledvina, you were mentioning earlier you'd never seen a single family with an ADU on the ground floor. There's an example property at 308 East Hall Street, which is actually just north of the Victorian District. It's across the line, across Gwinnett Street from the Victorian District line, but that is one example of one that exists in the district. So how did we align with a commercial looking building? Again, we've already gone through tiny lot, flood zone, only can do single family. There's a lot in this funnel as we're getting down further. And in looking at the HPC guidelines as to what could be built here, we knew, you know, 40-foot heights maximum. We knew that it needed to be visually compatible with existing resources in the district. And we also knew that the zoning dictates the use. HPC dictates the look and the appearance. And so, taking a couple of quotes from our ordinance here, that new construction and materials should be consistent with the standards and guidelines. It does not dictate the use or the interior program of the building. So on the right-hand side, I wanted to introduce the concept of building type versus building use and explain our thought process here. So throughout the district, there are many examples of residential type buildings that are now have a commercial use. This is an inn. There are also examples of commercial type buildings that now have a residential use. And if one of these property owners came before your board asking for a COA, which set of guidelines would you use to judge their project on? You would go by the building type, not the building use. Because we are at HPC, we are most concerned with compatibility with existing structures and not concerned with the use. That is a zoning classification. So that is how we got in this lane of building type commercial slash non-residential, and that is the lane that we have been designing this entire project in. And we meet that on all sorts of elements throughout the ordinance, including the storefront, the heights of the stories, the material uses. All of that was dictated out of this commercial slash non-residential lane that we are designing this building in. Other bits of our design influence included other flat roof contributing buildings in the district with recessed entrances, simple 2.5 story, could be interpreted as 3 story buildings throughout the district that might have a different use and entrance on the upper floor versus the lower floor. We also looked at, I'm going to say, poor examples of commercial infill design in the district and knew that we didn't want to go down that route. I have spoken with Kelly. We have since sent her all the updated specs, the rear deck details. The window inset to 3 inches is no problem. It just wasn't on our drawings, and we understand that we need to get an encroachment permit as part of our permitting process. So we agree with all the conditions laid out for those. I think the only decision before you guys today is interpretation of 7.9.10.A(V)(1)(2). And in that section, there's a laundry list of ordinance requirements that relate to windows. And it really boils down to residential facades versus non-residential facades. Those terms are not defined in the ordinance. Ground floor facade is another term that's not defined in the ordinance. So we were designing this building the whole time, again, in this commercial lane. And so we looked and said, oh, we're a non-residential facade and we can comply. So we have those great storefront windows on the front, and that says ground floor facade. We are interpreting the ground floor facade as the Abercorn Street frontage. So I just wanted to lay out our logic in designing this. One other issue I will note with this property is because the neighboring building is so close and we are so close to the property line, our architect, who I'm going to invite up here in a second to talk and explain his vision for this property, it's actually required by the building code that if we are within 3 feet of the property line, that we can only have 25% transparent spaces. So, you know, even if we added 30% with you guys now, we would get to the next phase and that wouldn't be allowed. So again, another reason why it would be defensible for you guys to choose option 9 of this section of the ordinance and consider us in the commercial line of a non-residential facade. We believe that is a very defensible position, and that is the way we interpreted the ordinance. I will now call Kevin up to go through the slides.
Hello, everyone. I'll try to make this quick. My name is Kevin Rose with Rose Architects. I think Bree's done a wonderful job explaining kind of trying to do the right thing here for the neighborhood and the neighbors, and how we can put a building here that isn't just a parking lot with a pod on it, which is what is happening now. I too agree with Bree. I've been in front of this board as long as it's been around, and in front of the HDBR for a good 35 years now. And facade is something that we have always discussed as being the single facade underneath the commercial part of the code. We also have that code issue between the 25% allowable open area and the ordinance, which says 30% for residential. And I think that's something that should be addressed by the ordinance as far as in the future meeting codes, letting them match so that y'all don't have this constant parade of people asking for things. Jonathan and I have spoken about how 30% is very prescriptive. And if you were to go through the neighborhood, you'd find that many of the buildings, the historic contributing structures, are between 7, 9, and 12% on their side facades. So that's also something else to consider here. As far as walking you through the building, Bree's done a wonderful job. As you can see, we have a very tight site. And within that, we tried to accommodate the neighbors' egress stairs because we don't want them all to burn up in the building next door. So that sets us roughly 3'6" to 3'9" because the site is skewed off the property line. And then the southern property line is on an angle, and that kind of erodes away at our setback. One good argument for this lane and basically using what is across the street, you know, our ordinance talks about setbacks meeting all of the contributing structures and taking them into consideration. We've tried to do this, and unfortunately, since the new zone came out, there's rules that say that we can't do this. So it's up to y'all to make that decision where the right move is. And as an architect, I feel that keeping the setbacks the way that we have them shown, we have an extremely wide lane here. So this is not a clearance problem whatsoever. If you were to look at it, it's one of the wider lanes in the neighborhood. It may be the widest. You can see in relation on this drawing to how it Duffy Street's, you know, just a little bit bigger here. First floor, straightforward. We have our parking space, as Bree mentioned. We're not looking for no parking here. We're looking for a parking space. It just doesn't meet a prescriptive zoning thing that Edward and us, we had talked about previously, that this counts as a parking space in one part of the zoning code and not in the other. So that's that. I'm trying to think of some other things to cover here. We did increase the window area on this facade to meet standards that staff had required. So although I feel strongly that we should be talking about the commercial part of the code and basically meeting 50% of our front facade with fenestration, I feel like we've met that, and the intent of the ordinance has been kind of taken into consideration and put into our building. We have to get people out of the back of the building, so having a stair down and also having the refuse areas not going to allow our parking space to meet that 25-foot, once again, arbitrary number that isn't in the zoning ordinance, but it's in the other traffic engineering section. Are there any other questions?
Courtney Bonney, yes. I'm just trying to make sure I'm understanding, kind of following the logic here, because the examples Bree showed, you know, those are uses that changed over time. That's not how they originated, right? So with this, I'm trying to understand. You guys are saying you're wanting to use the commercial portion of the ordinance because the constraints of the site, that's the portion that you're able to work with. Is that correct?
Yes.
So if you're following the residential portion, there's the constraints make it so that it's difficult to, you're not able to make that work. Is that right?
No, the porch requirements and some of those things and just how we tried to make some of that fit, and it just, it became non-compliant with every zoning code.
So, okay, so you just ran into too many provisions that you just could not.
This was ping-ponging from day one.
We
would create a solution that we thought was good, and then we would find another kind of Euclidean zoning thing that said, no, this isn't the way to go. So it really was a game of pachinko that we were trying to follow the ball the whole way down. Okay. And this is where we landed. I think it's been a thoughtful process for all of us. And, you know, the zoning staff and everyone's been very helpful in their recommendations. And they know that basically We're trying to just do what's across the street, but our zoning code doesn't allow that. There's 93% coverage on the building that would be the mirror across the street from us. So, you know, they're allowed to build on most of the site there. They have windows on the property line, which would not be allowed today because anything under 3 feet, there's zero windows allowed. So 3 to 5 feet, we're within that 25% zone, which is where we're at.
Okay. And just as a follow-up, so if you guys go to BZA and they end up saying, you know what, this apartment complex is going to have to remove this stair so you get this 3 feet back, would you guys then redesign or look at – I'm just trying to understand what the answers from BZA, what impact that might have on how you guys decide to move forward. Like if it's going to end up coming back with a redesign to us is –
I don't believe it will. I think they're for that aspect of it. It's just we're painted in a corner. And, I wish I could have spoken earlier about the zero setback and how things have changed, because historically we do have many zero setback buildings that are part of the historic fabric and the patterns. And I think it's a bigger question to talk about that and not just say no to them from a zoning standpoint, because neighbors don't like it, but that's part of our city. That's part of our history. So, if Bree can.
I'd say the main question for ZBA tomorrow is, will they consider the first floor unit an attached ADU or not? But no matter which way they rule on that, it does not change the exterior look of this building. It just depends on what happens inside. And does that bottom unit get a full kitchen? Does that resident deserve a full kitchen? That's really the question on the table tomorrow. Is like, is that a dwelling unit or is that not a dwelling unit and they just get a toaster oven and a mini fridge?
Yeah. Thanks, Bree.
Kathy Levina. So if they decide that it's not an ADU, then it'll become a single family home?
This will be a single family home with a studio downstairs.
The commercial?
Yes.
Will become the duplex.
But no, so it's really a matter of whether they get a stove or not, if you want to kind of boil it down to the zoning.
But will it be two separate living units?
It would be one at that point, and they would have probably a studio downstairs or something, an art studio, or who knows what they do with it, but yeah. This is something that, you know, we're trying to look at. We've all seen garden apartments, right? We're just trying to do a garden apartment here, which is what we've seen all over Savannah. That's really all we're asking to do. And unfortunately, the zoning code doesn't allow that on a lot of this size. If the lot was larger or that unit was bigger, then we could call it a duplex, blah, blah, blah. And staff, you know, they feel like we have a good argument here for all of that, so I don't see that as being an issue.
Pam Miller, I just want to thank you. I think that maybe by what you've just said, you understand sometimes where we sit as well, because we do not write the ordinances. We just have to try to interpret them and try to make them make sense for you folks. So we're often up against that. So thank you for at least recognizing that, and that's one of our concerns with this project today. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you. And I've been looking at this ordinance a lot, and I look forward to working with the staff more on some revisions. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other comments from the board? Okay. Hearing none, we have a comment from Ellie Isaacs.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation at Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC would like to express support for this very interesting and uniquely designed petition. We appreciate the concept of recognizing the pre-existing mixture of building typologies and uses that have evolved in the surrounding area and allowing it to influence the design of the building that is truly of its time. We appreciate that the building is not just a uniform box in its height and massing, and that the detailing is thoughtful to accentuate its features. We also appreciate the rooftop terrace is not visible, but provides outdoor space for this property owner. That's all.
Thank you. Okay, this time we're going to close off public comments and we'll go into board discussion. Let's go ahead and start with Scott.
I guess I have a question for staff. Can I do that right now?
Sure.
If we say that this is an ADU, doesn't it have to relate to the primary structure or no? Since it's on a separate lot, it doesn't? Or how can it be an ADU? Because then architecturally it has to.
Really, that's almost out of our purview because we're really sort of contextually outside. The inside usage doesn't really come to us, does it?
Inside use does not come to us. We do not review use. And in this case, we did talk about the ADU standards because, you know, it is technically an ADU. But we said since it's one building, it reads as one building, that those standards do not apply in this case. So that's how we addressed it.
Okay, thank you.
Katrina Hornung, can you pull up the staff recommendations for me, please? Thank you. I just want to thank the petitioners. You know, it is exciting to see density in, you know, some of these projects that we're seeing. And I'm going to go with staff recommendations on this one.
Courtney Bonney, yeah, I agree. I feel like, you know, housing is such an important need downtown, and there's a lot of lots that are, again, highly underutilized. So I think this is something that could maybe set a precedent for how we start to address lots that are in these sort of situations. So I appreciate the thoughtfulness and working through all of these issues and kind of what was brought forward. So that's about it.
Yeah. Brian Woods. Yeah, I agree with the staff recommendations, and I think it's cool that you really get creative in like figuring out some ways to overcome some of the more like logistical issues of this lot, like it not being straight and yes, a few other things. Yeah, yes.
Pam Miller, no comment.
Kathy Levina, I think it is very creative. I have concern about the height, especially since the height of the historic building next door is 31 feet, and this is 37 feet plus that continues about 30 feet alongside the historic. I don't know if you ever looked at, instead of having the entrance to the left, maybe you put it to the right so that the height is not so overwhelming to the historic building that runs adjacent to it. I feel the facade along the lane, I don't have it in front of me, the third floor windows, the drastic reduction in size or proportion doesn't relate. Maybe it would if that tile went all the way up to the cornice, if you want to call it, or the parapet. So it would be, I think, a vertical element that extends the height of the three stories. Maybe that'll tie it all together. But yeah, the write-up stated that the windows were reduced, I think, based on the residential use versus the commercial use, but it's all residential, sort of. And then the tile accent band, if it were me, I would add it to the third floor cornice line above the stairs. I think that would give it a little flash. That's it.
Okay, Jeff, I'd just like to say I like this project a lot, and considering the context of the area it's in, this will be a welcome addition on a challenging lot. At this point, I'd like to go ahead and ask for a nomination or for a motion.
Katrina Hornung. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Brianna Paxton and 1201 Abercorn LLC, application 25-001662-COA 1108 Abercorn, with the following staff conditions, numbers 1 through 5. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Scott Crotzer, I second.
Being a motion and seconded, I'd like to go ahead and call for a vote. Let's go ahead and start with Scott.
Scott Crosser, I approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Jeff Matrico, approve. Motion carries. Let's go on to item number 16, the petition of Hestia Community Partners, Brianna Paxton, 25-00-1118 COA, 605 West 32nd Street.
So this is Kelly Mitchell again. So the applicant is requesting approval for new construction small parts 1 and 2 for a two-story primary building and a two-story accessory dwelling unit at 605 West 32nd Street. As the commission likely remembers, this project was heard at the March HPC meeting. At this meeting, commission and staff had concerns about the project. Concerns for the commission include the height, massing scale, and lot coverage of the primary building, the size of the deck on the accessory building, and the fenestration pattern. Staff concerns include transparency percentage on the accessory dwelling unit, the size of the deck on the ADU, and design of the driveway. So staff will discuss if and how these standards are met in just a minute. So after the previous meeting, staff went back to review kind of the area around the project. The area in yellow is the subject property. So staff looked primarily around the immediate block. Staff found that there were two contributing buildings that were 2 stories in height. There was also a third that's just outside this map that was also contributing as 2 stories. There are also 5 non-contributing buildings that are also 2 stories in height in this area. Just as a reminder, for visual compatibility, staff can only consider contributing buildings and not non-contributing buildings. In this case, though, staff finds that a 2-story building could be appropriate. Staff applicant also provided the height of surrounding buildings that was provided in the supplemental packet that was attached to the agenda. So in this case, the applicant is also arguing that the current proposed height is the minimum height that be considered while also meeting the standards for floor-to-floor height, for the foundation height, and for the pitch of the roof. So the photos on my left, and these two, and then these two of the current design, photos on my right with the previous proposal. So the overall proposed design for the primary structure has not changed much since the previous proposal. Some of the conditions on the staff recommendation were met since the previous meeting. That includes installing a sidewalk to the public sidewalk and providing lighting specifications. There is still some inconsistency on the pitch of the roof. The elevation drawing showed as 512. The cut sheet showed as 412. Both are appropriate. We just need to know which one's being used. The applicant also made some adjustments to the fenestration, mainly seen on the side elevations. The windows on the front facade do not appear to have been changed. Again, the overall height and scale of the building have not changed, but staff still considers this height and massing to be appropriate in this case. The overall design, the accessory building has also remained relatively the same. The applicant has altered the size of the deck. Just a quick typo in the staff report. Staff did mention it as a porch at one point. It is a deck, and it's not a porch in this situation. So as previously mentioned, there were concerns raised by both staff and commission about the depth of this proposed deck. At the previous meeting, it was supposed to be 8 feet deep with a 3-foot, 10-inch deep stair, so just shy of 12 feet deep overall. The depth of the deck has been reduced to 6 feet, stairs still 3'10", so it's 9'10" deep currently. The staff still has concerns about the depth of the deck, because again, this is not something that's seen on ADUs in the immediate area. There was also previous concerns about the transparency standards on the ADU on the elevation facing Burrows, this elevation. Since the previous meeting, the applicant has proposed to install a fence. So this elevation, at least lower portion, will not be visible from Burrows anymore. The applicant would just need to provide some detailed information about that fence, such as materials. Finally, there were concerns held by staff about the design of the driveway. Since the previous meeting, staff found that the ordinance defines the driveway as a private access road that provides vehicular access from a street to a parking area, garage, et cetera. So it defines it as a street and not from a public right-of-way. Since the driveway is from a lane, it's not a street, so the standards do not apply.
Staff does find, again, that overall proposed design of the ADU and the primary building meet the standards, just with some conditions. So with that, staff recommends approval of the new construction small part 1 and 2 with the conditions seen on the screen. Does commission have any questions?
Okay, hearing no questions from anybody on the commission, let's go ahead and hear from the petitioner.
Hello, Brianna Paxton. I'm here representing South Streets LLC, property owner for this lot. As a reminder, this property is proposed to be redeveloped into a duplex with an ADU, and the property will be owner-occupied by the owner's son, who will live in one unit and rent out the other units. And we decided upon a duplex because there historically was a side-by-side duplex on this lot. As Kelly mentioned, we've had some back and forth since March, and we heard your feedback at that meeting. So we have redesigned the deck for the ADU to be a 6-foot depth. We added a fence to the rear yard, a driveway between the garage and the lane. Window strength fenestration was aligned where possible, and we extensively studied the height. Here's the updated site plan. You can note the dotted line on the rear yard is the wooden fence that will be installed. You can see the deck is shrunk and the gravel driveway. We also made sure that the site plan reflects the sidewalk connector from the front porch to the existing sidewalk is highlighted in dark gray there. It's the front elevation. I think Kelly's slides probably did a better job of showing some of the changes, but particularly on the lane elevation, you can see the architect was able to line up the windows on the first floor and the second floor, as you all had requested. This is the view of the ADU with the porch or the deck brought back in. This is the site plan of the deck. I want to point out that our intent for having a 6-foot deck here is that in the ordinance, we require a 6-foot front porch on all residential properties. So the tenants and residents in the front house get private outdoor space. We are not allowed to put a porch on the ADU because it would violate the ZBA ruling that our building footprint can only be 610 square feet. So this has to be uncovered. And we would like to give that resident of the ADU their own private outdoor space. This is a south-facing deck. It would be great for them to sit there and watch the sunset. So that is, we're not trying to be defiant here about the deck. We're really just trying to provide the same amenities on the front duplex as we are on the ADU, so those residents can have some similar quality of life in this area. When we studied the heights, one of the reasons why we are 30 feet 2 inches tall is because of these ordinance elements that the foundation has to be 30 inches off the ground, the first floor has to be 11 feet, the second floor has to be 9 feet, and the roof pitch will be 512. In discussions with our contractor, they did not recommend a 412 roof pitch. They recommended a 512 roof pitch was better for long-term viability and maintenance, from what I understand. So we are 30 feet tall for those reasons. We also studied the heights of buildings surrounding us, and those range between 20 feet tall and 32 feet tall. The closest contributing building is 26 feet tall, so we are 4 feet difference in heights. These are the 4 nearby contributing buildings that I've highlighted on the map, along with their building heights, ranging from 30 feet to 23 feet. We looked also down Brownville Court, so these are the properties just to the west of our property, and those range from 22, 23, and 32 feet tall. Again, these properties are infill houses that the city built in, I believe, the early 2000s.
Further down West 32nd Street, again, more screenshots for you guys showing the variety of one and one and a half story houses ranging from 20 to 26 feet. And the more western portion of West 32nd Street in view of our property, 23 and 30 feet tall properties. So in conclusion, we are designing this project because we believe it's historically appropriate. There was a side-by-side duplex here previously that we're trying to match. We believe the 30 feet, 2-inch height is visually compatible with the contributing context. The design and materials meet the ordinance standards. Our duplex and ADU at the small scale that it is meets our community housing goals, and the owner-occupied housing meets the neighborhood plan goals. So, again, we tried to take as much of your feedback as we could and make what changes we could, but we urge you to vote in favor of this project.
Are there any questions from members of the board?
Pam Miller. What do we do as far as the front yard? Was there something, did we have a discussion about the front yard last time and like needing more of a front yard?
So
then we talk about that.
There are a tremendous amount of utility encroachments in the front yard. If you can see my cursor on the screen, this corner right here is actually our property line and it goes over here. So all of this, where it says 47.75 is the existing sidewalk. And so we will have a very small green space, a foot or two between the existing sidewalk and the porch.
Basically up to the sidewalk. Gotcha. I know we had talked about some way to give them a little bit more of a yard, but that wasn't feasible.
I think it's just a situation of the encroachments being in so far into the yard. I think if these sidewalks were going to be built today, the city wouldn't have taken that much of the property. It would have been more in the public right of way. Okay. It's kind of a unique situation that the sidewalk is so far onto the property line.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions of the board? Hearing none, let's go ahead to public comment. We'll start with Elizabeth Richardson.
Good afternoon to everybody. My name is Elizabeth Richardson. I stay at 622 West 32nd Street. I did have some concern from when it first started, but now since I see the design of it now, I really don't have anything else to comment except for concerning garage. There's no garage. Nobody else around in that neighborhood has a garage. So that was my concern. And then it's near the lane area. I was just wondering how that's going to look in our neighborhood.
I understand. Thank you for coming. Are there any other questions that staff has for? Okay. Thank you. Next, we have Sheila Jackson.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sheila Jackson, and I've been a resident of Kyler Brownsville for over 25 years. And I've watched it grow. To let you know a little about me living there, I was the fourth family in the area when they developed the area. So I've seen it grow. And I'm not trying to say, you know, I don't want the area to continue to grow because as we know, as long as we live, there's going to be growth. But in the last few months, we have had on Lavinia Street, three houses built. We have had one built on 34th and Florence Street and another one on Florence Street. And the houses, you know, they blend in well with the area. Now, looking at the house that Ms. Paxton and the owner want to put on 605 32nd Street, to me, it does not blend in. First of all, in the area, we don't have any garages. Now, this is going to come with a two-car garage, and you're going to get to it through the lane. The lane is not very wide at all. And as long as I've been staying there, I've seen very few cars going up and down the lane. Now, garbage truck, well, you know, every week, but that's understandable. So I'm trying to figure out how this particular ADU with a two-car garage with a balcony is going to blend in with the community. You know, and I've seen with the balcony, you know, whoever's there, they're going to be overlooking in the backyards of the residents that lives on Borough Street. So that's going to take away from their privacy. And to me, the design of the building will be an eyesore. And I'm not saying it's not a great design. All I'm saying, it is not a great design for the location where they want to build it. You know, we're trying to keep things intact, and the photos that they showed of the other houses, you know, the duplex, well, that's grandfathered in. That house has been there ever since I've been there. Now, the house she said that was on the property where they want to build, well, I don't know anything about that, but since I've been there, it has long been gone. So I can't tell you what it looked like or anything of that nature. But we're trying to keep, you know, the neighborhood intact. I'm not saying, you know, we don't want anything built there. If the house blends in with the neighborhood, single family home, that will be fine. And now you have a ADU that's on the ground level. I don't know any ADU in our neighborhood at this time. I'm not saying there is not any. I just don't know, especially around the park. So therefore, we're trying to, as I stated, you know, keep it intact. So if that can be done, you know, we will appreciate it. Like I said, a single family home would blend in just nicely. I have no problems about that, but a AUD, two-car garage, balcony, it does not blend in, and it will stand out as an eyesore if it's permitted to be built. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Let's go on next to Ellie Isaacs.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC is in support of the creation of new housing units in this location and the designs put forth. Our ARC still has a concern regarding the staircase location attached to the deck of the ADU, which we've already expressed to the petitioner. We believe that the staircase would be more visually compatible if it were attached to the interior of the deck, aka attached to the exterior wall of the ADU, rather than its current location. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we've got Jason Coombs.
Hello, I am here today to represent the local chapter of YIMBY, which is Yes in My Backyard, which is a pro-housing advocacy group. You know, as such, I'm required to tell you and repeat the statistic that we're 10,000 housing units behind, and every little bit helps. And both with this item and the one before, we see people working really hard to fit housing wherever they can into our, you know, in-town neighborhoods, and that's a great thing. And I want to commend you and staff for working with petitioners to find ways to say yes. Please keep doing that. Every unit helps. I want to read a little bit from another letter I wrote for another project that Bree is working on, her affordability overlay. In Savannah, about 45% of renters are cost burdened, spending over 30% of their income on housing. Our economy requires a strong local workforce, and many in our working class struggle to find housing they can afford near their jobs. More housing nearby job centers will increase employee recruitment, retention, morale, etc. The proposal would support extra density and affordability in one of Savannah's walkable, transit-accessible neighborhoods, giving residents easier access to work. So again, I'm here for this one, you know, petition item, but this is a greater fight. And again, I commend you and encourage you to keep saying yes to people who are trying so hard to fit housing wherever they can. Thank you.
Thank you. Josh Yellen.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Josh Yellen also speaking in support of this application. I think that everyone else has done a better job than I will talking about, one, the need for housing in the city of Savannah, but also, as Bree stated, the visual compatibility of this site. I was going to make clear that this ordinance being in Kyler Brownsville is slightly different in its interpretation of visual compatibility than in other sections of the ordinance. And as was referenced, that we are required to look at the contributing structures, which are nearby to the site. And as was shown on the plan, and maybe I'll be able to find it, maybe I won't, the nearest contributing structures are within close height range to what they've proposed. As Bree explained, they looked at studying a height reduction. It was not feasible based upon the actual criteria of the ordinance, which de facto, unless you want to see a flat roof, requires them to build up to this height to get the units into this building. I would also want to state that the Kyler Brownsville ordinance is also unique, and this, just to be very clear, I could be getting over legal with you. Visual compatibility is with contributing buildings, defined term, and structures to which it is visually related. Visually related is then defined as both contributing and non-contributing buildings within view of the site. As is also shown, there are the properties within view of the site, non-contributing properties that are in fact taller than being proposed. They've been there for 20 or so years. There have been no problems with adjacency to the lower single family homes. They have coexisted. They have been fine. They are also visually compatible to their context and their surroundings. And so once again, I do support this application as it is visually compatible and it provides much needed housing for the area. So thank you all.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to go ahead and close for a public comment and we'll go into board discussions. I will go ahead and start with Scott.
I really appreciate the work that staff has done on this project and relating it to the buildings. I think the design has been well thought out. I'm just still worried a little bit about the public comment with visibility into people's yards. That's all I have, and that would just be primarily from the ADU, I would say.
Katrina Hornung, I'm just going to echo that comment. From Scott.
Not to interrupt real quick, the applicant does a rebuttal period after public comment. So I'm sure.
Certainly, of course.
Yeah.
Thank you. Brianna Paxton, I just wanted to mention the reason there's a two-car garage is because two parking spaces are required for this. So that's the reason for the garage. And it sounds like maybe moving the stairs to be next to the wall of the ADU would be an amenable path forward, and we are certainly happy to work with staff to make that happen, to make the deck less of an issue for this. So just wanted to share that.
Kathy Levine, I've got a point of clarification. Does Mr. Yellen work for the developer?
So I'm not sure who was listed on the application here. Bree, yes, I was working for them on this project. Yes, ma'am.
Katrina, you want to go ahead?
Thank you. Katrina Hornung. I wanted to echo Scott's comment about the ADU. I think as well, Ms. Paxton's amenability to changing the stairs would be helpful in this instance, and I do still have slight concerns about the height of the main structure, although I understand why it is at the height that it is. Thank you.
Courtney Bonney, I would just like to say that I appreciate the consideration for the comments from the last meeting and the changes that the applicant has made and their continued willingness to continue to tweak some of the drawings to move forward. So I think that shows, you know, willingness to hear what the neighbors are saying and working with that. So again, appreciate the effort that has gone into this project.
Brian Woods. I agree with the previous board members. I really don't have any other comments. Well, yeah, that's all.
Pam Miller. First of all, Ms. Jackson, and I'm sorry, ma'am, I've forgotten your name. Thank you so much for being here. In that we appreciate when, especially neighbors can come. We have a lot of people coming from, you know, that are involved with the developments or somebody that knows something about something. But when a neighbor comes and speaks to us, it really matters. We want to hear what you have to say. We want to consider that. You have to go back and live there. We don't. So we get that. Part of what's going on within our city is, of course, as you heard, we are so many housing units short. People have no place to live. So we have to balance that between trying to create space for people to reside, but also be mindful of the neighborhood. So with that in mind, I think part of what we're seeing today is that most of this meets the criteria that's allowed within our ordinances. What kind of puts us in a space there that, you know, we don't get to say personally whether we like this or not. It's not a personal call on our part. It's really what matches. But I want to just tell you, you are being heard. We've heard you. We've seen you. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Kathy Levina, I bring my concern from last meeting about the main facade, and my concern is the alignment of the windows on that front facade between the first and the second floor. I think aligning the windows vertically, especially between floors, creates a visual flow, a little bit of order. And if you look at the historic properties, contributing properties that surround it, maybe you can bring us back. If you can see that the windows align on the top and bottom, not building 24 and 25, and you look at 24 and 25 and you go, oh my goodness, there's a little something off. And that's because the windows are not vertically aligned. If you can continue forward one, This is not your presentation. I need your presentation up. I'm sorry.
Pamela, you've got a question.
Brian Woods. So I heard them say they were going to consider moving the stairs. So would the deck stay in the same place though, pretty much? Or would the deck move too?
Yeah, that sounds like deck will stay in the same place. What will happen? Let me bring up her plans. What will happen is this open stair will probably be pulled within the footprint of the deck itself, but otherwise it will stay the same.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board members or comments?
We haven't seen the images, but I'm trying to get pulled up.
Sorry.
Illustrate my.
Yeah, so these are the only, images I have on my PowerPoint, minus these two. Majority came from her PowerPoint. That one would pull up.
The PowerPoint that was submitted.
Yeah.
With our packet.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Your staff recommendation. I believe I thought that's where it was. Showing the other historic contributing buildings that are two stories. Those are the pictures I'm looking for. There we go. Music. Okay, keep going. No, those aren't. What? These right here. Okay. If you look here, whew, thank you. At the 33rd Street, 115 West 33rd Street. If you look at 628, 630 West 32nd Street, 501, 503 West 34th Street, you see that the windows are aligned. If there are three on the lower, there's three on the upper, but they are centrally aligned. And I feel that is needed on this design to be visually compatible and create a visual continuity between that first and second floor, especially on the front facade.
Done. Okay. Are there any other comments?
One more comment. Brian brought up a good point. Can that deck be flipped to the other side so that it doesn't overlook the other community's yards, or has that been considered?
That'll be an applicant question. Do you have the applicant come up and answer that, or?
Yes, please.
Brianna Paxton, just so I understand, you're recommending the deck
be moved between the two structures. Maybe look at the site plan. So instead of having it here, it would be here.
Yeah, an internal style. So that way it kind of alleviates the comments that we had both last time and now about looking into all the lower yards.
Would that move the location of the building itself? I feel like that maybe is too close to the existing building.
An alternate option might be splitting the stair so the level of the deck comes lower, right? So their eye line doesn't necessarily go over the fence. That makes sense? So like half a level up and then have the deck and then another half level to enter.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way you're just kind of splitting, adding a landing to the stair basically. So when you're on the deck, you would, you're not able to look down. You're looking at your fence line.
Yeah. Is the six, can I ask if the 6 foot depth of the deck is an issue? If you guys are okay with that, the configuration of like stairs, deck, landing could be something we can work out with staff, but like we need to know the size that you guys are okay with.
I think if you're asking me personally, or like for my comment, I would definitely think that it really was the height. I don't know if it was so much the size in the comments, especially that I was addressing, in having someone out on the deck for long periods of time that would be overlooking all of those backyards. If the deck was smaller, it wouldn't allow people to be out there for long periods mm-hmm. of time. If it were shorter, if it were on the other side, I think it, there's several ways to address that. But for me, it was addressing the community's concerns with like basically being on a bird's eye view of everything else in that whole neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Even when describing the height of the building, you know, having a gable that's 30 feet is different than having people up that's 30 feet. Mm-hmm. So that's why I had questions about the deck itself. And I understand now the questions of the height of the building. I think that that's fine. But with it's concerning people being out there, say you're having a barbecue, long periods of time, because it is going to be a livable space. Can it be not necessarily size-wise, but position-wise, accommodating for that bird's eye view?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's definitely possible for us to work with staff on kind of what side and what configuration that would work. And it's helpful to know the depth that you guys are okay with.
Katrina Hornung, just to go off that comment, I think that the 6 foot depth that you have that mimics the porch is a much better solution than the 8 or 10 feet that was prior.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have any other comments from commissioners?
Kathy Ledvina, I'm going to again just reiterate the a three-bay fenestration pattern on the second floor is more in keeping with the historic contributing buildings in the neighborhood. It would create a visual continuity and a symmetry that I believe that front facade is missing.
Okay, thank you. Can we have a motion?
Just to clarify, are we adding conditions that the petitioner work with staff to adjust the height of the deck and also align the vertical windows?
You are welcome to put that into your motion.
So we're looking at the height and the placement, or...
It's the location.
If you lower it, it could just be the thing. And I understand the petitioner is amenable to working with staff on that. And what about the windows? Is that something as well, so we can put that in the.
Thank you for all your thoughtful comments. So I think, you know, we of course love to work with applicants, but I think if there are a lot of design changes here, I just be speaking personally, I think feel more comfortable looking back to you all, because if we're redesigning things, you should take a look at it and make sure that it's the direction that we normally don't. If they're minor tweaks, you know, staff can do that. But if we're talking about moving the deck from one side to the other or radically changing the size or changing the fenestration, that's a little bit beyond really what staff has the authority to approve, if that makes sense.
Okay, so I'd like to ask for a motion whether or not you want to continue it or and redesign it, or you want to put conditions on it so that we can help this applicant move forward.
Frankly, I'm more concerned about the deck than the windows. So, I mean, I'm prepared, I think, to go. But you're still saying, Jonathan, that needs to come back.
I think we would just need some clear direction as opposed to just, work with staff to redesign the deck is a little hard for us to know exactly what that means. If you all said, we think there should only be a staircase going up to the ADU and no deck, that's very clear. Or the deck should have a depth of 3 feet so that people don't hang out on there. If you can give us some a little more specificity on that, I think that would be helpful as opposed to, you know.
So my only question with that is I like the idea of moving the deck if possible, to be honest with you, because it's the primary owner that's facing that. Sure. But is there anything that you're aware of that would prevent that 6 foot, if we were to say 6 feet, as far as any ordinances go or anything that we would need to be concerned
with? So there is a
with?
Requirement for a, I believe, a 10-foot distance between the primary
so there needs to be
residence and the ADU. So I'm not sure what the existing setback is on that site plan, but if this were to encroach on that, that would be a problem.
So if we said 6 feet to get through this and it encroaches, then we'd have to reconsider that. I just want to make it the easiest process today and so that they can get started on this.
Okay.
Can we ask the applicant what they prefer?
So it looks like 9. Having a little trouble reading it, going blind in my old age. But it looks like I'm not sure what this dimension is, but there would have to be a 10.
Either or, can we?
There would have to be 10 feet. There would have to be a setback. But if you're talking about flipping it from one side to the other, I think, or changing the design radically or other things, I think it would just be, unless you want to get very specific with us today, which is fine, that it should probably come back to you all so you can see whether you think it's visually compatible.
I guess that's my question. Can we do an either or? Either 6 feet if it's...
I think it might be helpful to hear from the applicant on this one because, you know, if they're amenable to the option of just lowering the deck as drawn so that it removes their sight line, that's probably the quickest way to move forward without a lot of redesigns and whatnot.
Thank you. Brianna Paxton, I was going to suggest maybe if it's easier for you guys, maybe we remove the deck, just have stairs, and pass this thing today so we can move forward. And it's just that tenant doesn't get outdoor space, and this public record shows why, and we had this big discussion about it. But I think it would be, if we lose the deck, then we lose the deck. I think is where we're at. So the front fenestration pattern, there are closets on that interior wall between the two units, which helps with sound between the two units. And so I don't know where the architect would move the closet, but that is the reason why there's two windows in each unit on the upper floor for that.
Any further comments? Does anyone have a motion they'd like to offer? Kathy, someone?
I just have a question. What did staff mean again by more visually compatible?
We were more concerned about the depth of it than the height of it.
So would that now be eliminated and we would just put nothing, or the deck is removed?
Yeah. So if you want to move the deck entirely, you just need to be specific about that. Just not just redesign, because that could be a little more open-ended.
I personally don't have a problem with the, I mean, you know, there's no problem with the deck. It's just, you know, if they lowered it a little bit, like Courtney said, would that be more, or push the ADU out towards the lane more so it would accommodate it on the other side?
Folks, we're getting bogged down here. I would say either we come up with a motion and move forward, or we do a continuance so this can get worked out. Either one is fine, but we need to pick a lane.
Well, I think that the applicant wants to move forward, obviously. So
I agree, and I would love to see it move forward. So let's come up with a motion that will help them move forward.
I mean, I guess we could leave it as it is.
That's an option.
I'd be willing to try to put forth a motion.
Okay. Let's go.
All right. Just give me 1 second. I need to grab my glasses. So. This is Pam Miller. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Eschick Community Partners, Brianna Paxton, 25001118 COA, 605 West 32nd Street, with conditions to 1, remove the deck, 2, confirm the pitch of the roof for the primary building and the hood type element above the rear door of the primary building, and 3, provide material and detail information for the proposed rear fence, because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance. Is that correct?
Go a second.
Scott Krotzer, I second.
Excellent. Let's go to a vote. We'll start with Kathy.
Kathy Ledvina, deny.
Pam Miller, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Jeff Ventrico, approve. Motion carries. Thank you.
Let's go on to the next item. The petition of Elder Studios, 25-001663 COA, 2613 Montgomery Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. So in this case, the applicant is requesting approval for an amendment regarding material and design changes for the projects located at 2613 Montgomery Street. Proposed changes include a material change from a standing seam metal roof to architectural asphalt shingles, adding a security gate, window and door changes, adding wooden wall brackets, fences and gates for the property line and parking area, and a different wall paneling that we'll discuss about as we go into this. But I think the easiest thing to do here is just to kind of look at the previously approved from last time and the currently proposed. This came to you all last month, March 26th, as an amendment to the original project approved in 2023. So at last month's meeting, the recommendation was to approve with the following condition, which was to select an approved material for the wall paneling. Cementitious wall panels were proposed from the original design that had first included metal panels. So those were neither of which is approved in the ordinance. The brand that they are proposing currently was originally thought to be a material other than fiber cement. It has since been discovered that it is in fact also fiber cement. So the applicant is going to be applying for a special exception to use this in select areas on the building. Overall, staff found that the standards for those changes were met
except for that. So I'll just walk you through this, and the applicant can probably do a better job explaining anything, but I will go through this. So building A, this is the primary building, just with these elevations, you can see there's this, the standing seam metal roof is changing, just some of the configuration of the windows is just slightly different. There's areas, as you can see, where there's still the paneling being proposed. And then, you know, just slight window location and pairing changes. The previous design had, with some of this, it did have a paneling, which now is going to be siding. So some areas they did change it to fiber cement siding to kind of match with the rest of the building. Other cases, you know, it's pretty minute detail in those areas where they wanted to make the change. And then we had the roof configuration was slightly different on this current proposal for the building B change. And go back. But staff was finding for the areas where they are still proposing to keep the little bits of fiber cement paneling, that just initial thoughts and conversations was that it seemed to be, you know, it's only on select areas of the building rather than covering the entire wall, that it could be a reasonable request. And then they had also proposed a fence. Now, in this situation, we had the fence material, but we did not have a site plan with it at the time that the report was written. So the conditions on this, it'd be to approve the amendment to file number 25-000503-COA for the proposed changes with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for review and approval prior to submitting the final drawings for permitting, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One would be to provide the height and spacing information about the fence around the property line, as well as the site plan showing its location. And then two, to apply for a special exception for the fiber cement panels or select an approved material. And I would be happy to answer any questions or turn it over to the applicant.
Do you have any questions, board members? Okay, hearing none, let's hear from the applicant, please. Please state your name.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eric Meckley with J. Elder Studio. We're just going to pull up that same.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that we were just looking at is fine.
This is the fence, but then.
Gotcha.
You want to just go through.
Totally. We were actually just here last month. You may still be somewhat familiar with this building. This was originally designed back in 2022, originally went up in 2023. The owner has been seeking to get workforce housing and some more affordable housing incorporated in this project. That being said, this is getting built at a very different economic time than originally planned or designed for. So we're just trying to help this client move along, get a project that's still compatible with the neighborhood and with other recent developments and other renovations in the area. And I'll kind of try to do my best to clarify these changes here because they are very minor. So this first one, really it's just shifting the main roof of this building over here, try to cloud it in this red area, just from a standing seam metal roof to an asphalt shingle. All the roofing over small balconies and over little protrusions will still remain standing seam. We feel like that will be probably more readily seen at the human scale rather than in a car going by on this project. So we've fought to keep that standing seam. Another one is just the windows. So this is a really minor detail. The configuration size of windows has not changed. We've just switched manufacturers from one aluminum clad wood window to a different brand of aluminum clad wood window. With that, the 3 foot wide windows are now like 2 foot 11 and 3/8 or something somewhere. So, I mean, it's really a one for one switch. We just kind of want to be thorough and dot our I's and cross our T's and all that. With the fencing, this was originally in the proposed project. We just didn't really have the materials called out, which we agree with staff's comments. We just recently provided that fencing detail, so we're hoping that we could work with staff on that and make sure it's all meeting the ordinance. One small detail on building B, which we hadn't discussed prior, so I'll try my best to zoom in here. In the original design, we had small canopies over the unit entries along, I believe it's 43rd Street on Building B. Once they started construction, coming to terms with grading and coming to terms with other utility easements and unforeseen site circumstances at the time this was designed in 2022, 2023, we realized that we did have some minor encroachments. So we worked with city planning just to provide what we think is an appropriate detail. Essentially, we're reducing that overhang to 2 feet from 3 feet. We felt it was kind of silly to have a column supporting such a small overhang. So we're just going to propose a bracket that's seen elsewhere on Building A. The biggest one, and I don't know if I really need to get into the nitty gritty, we would have applied for a special exception here, and that is for the use of Nichiha fiber cement siding panels. So as I said previously, this building was originally designed at a time where the zoning ordinance did not prohibit metal wall panels as a material to be used. Here we are, fast forward a couple years later, we're trying to find what we think is the best substitute for metal wall panels, which is something that is not currently approved for use. So we had the choice of looking at substitute materials that could be brick, that could be lap siding, that could be stucco. I feel like there might be a couple of others I'm missing, but really we're looking at these areas that are essentially acting like spandrel panels between larger window systems. And we just felt like if we just randomly put stucco or brick here or try to redesign it to incorporate lap siding, it really wasn't staying true to what was originally approved. So we're trying to find the most similar to material to honor the original design without having to completely redesign this project just because maybe 2 to 5% of the building facade was designed with a material that's no longer approved. We understand the use of the ordinance to prohibit that material to prevent kind of like Lego boxy buildings coming up in historic areas. We think having small spandrel panels, we feel is a tasteful use of that material where just throwing up lap siding or stucco there kind of feel like it was an afterthought. So we will be applying for a special exception there, but I just kind of want to clarify that maybe that zoning ordinance could use some finesse. It feels very prescriptive of outright banning materials when sometimes those said materials could be the best use case for small elements of a building, such as these areas. I believe that is all the revisions. Oh, and the security gate for the parking, we've attached details to our application for staff. This was something that was in the original submission, we just hadn't had a basis of design. We've sent that details now to staff for them to review. So not necessarily a change, just more of a clarification at this point. And happy to answer any further questions.
Any board members have questions?
Courtney, Bonnie, just to clarify, these are just VE issues essentially.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? We have no public comment on this, so we'll go ahead and close for a board discussion. We'll start with Scott.
Scott Krotzer, no comment.
Katrina Horning, no comment.
Courtney Bonney, I agree with staff recommendation on this item.
Brian Woods, I agree with staff recommendation.
Pam Miller, no comment.
Definitely, Bonney, understand the need to economize, and I appreciate the continued use of the standing seam metal roof over the balconies as such. I have concern over the fiber cement panels because it is a prohibited material. Of course, my concern is the fiber cement panels are on your most featured elements in the design, and the design is big. It's, you know, it's a block. It's buildings on an entire block. So there's quite a lot of area that will be paneled with the fiber cement, which is, again, a prohibitive material. So you've got your oriel windows, which are a prominent feature on the building on East Montgomery Street, which is a main street. You've got the fiber cement on the prominent corner at 43rd Street. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just going by your blue highlights. And then there are three two-story window elements fronting 43rd Street, and all of those will be accented by the fiber cement panels. So I have concern with using the fiber cement panels, since especially since it's a prohibited material. It's not a small usage of that prohibited material. It's rather large and on the most prominent features of the building.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Courtney Bonney, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of J. Elder Studio 25-001663-COA with the conditions outlined by staff. Number one, provide height and spacing information about the fence around the property line, as well as the site plan showing its location. And number two, apply for a special exception for the fiber cement panels or select a different approved material because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Katrina Horning, I second the motion.
Great. Having a motion entered and properly seconded, let's go to a vote. We'll start with Scott.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Courtney Bonney, I approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve. Kathy Levina, deny because I like to see an approved material.
Okay, Jeff Notarico, approve. Motion carries. Thank you. Let's go on to number 15, the petition of Eli Lurie, 412 East 46th Street, 25-001656COA, contributing demolition.
Thank you. This is Caitlin Chamberlain again. All right. So the applicant is requesting approval of a partial demolition of a one-story garage at the rear of the property located at 412 East 46th Street. The intent is to expand the existing garage structure on the west elevation and include a second story to convert the building to an accessory dwelling unit with a garage on the first floor. In doing so, the west wall would be removed as well as the roof. The front elevation that faces toward East 46th Street consists of a vinyl overhead garage door and vinyl siding. There is no historic material remaining on this elevation. So we'll just get into a little bit of the context first, and then we'll get more into that. So 412 East 46th Street was built circa 1929 and is within the period of significance for Ardsley Park, which is 1910 to 1930s. Based on the cadastral survey from 1936 and the Sanborn maps of 1953 and 1955 to 66, a small one-story garage was in existence at that time. The cadastral survey notes that the structure was 14 feet in length and 10 feet 7 in width. The current building is 18 foot 6 in length and 10 foot 3 in width. It is not known whether the original garage structure was built at the same time as the existing building, but it is common to see garage structures on the lanes throughout Ardsley Park. However, in many cases, the accessory buildings match the principal buildings in materials, if not style, as well. In this instance, the garage does not have the cedar shake shingles of the principal house, and the roof forms are different. The exposed rafter tails on the garage do not match the principal historic house. So for the review process, and this is just some Google Street View images from 2012 and 2014, showing a derelict garage door. This is a photo from 1983, which unfortunately we don't get to see the status of the garage at that point, but that was the oldest photo we were able to locate. These are some current images as well of what we're seeing today. So there's kind of a mix of siding. There is still some wood siding present, but there's also vinyl and fiber cement. And this is just some of the condition on the corner towards the rear of the property. And then the inside, which is kind of just a paneling, a beadboard paneling that is not old. So for the process, for conservation districts, it's a little different. All requests for demolition of any building within a conservation district shall be reviewed by the City of Savannah's Historic Preservation Officer prior to the issuance of a demolition permit. For the purposes of this section, demolition shall include the removal of 50% or more of a building. And that will be determined, so our staff will determine if the building is eligible for contributing status. If a building is determined to be eligible for contributing status, the application for demolition shall be referred to the HPC for review. So before the deep dive research was done on this, staff found it could be eligible for contributing status, and that's how this was applied for. Although the proposed project is a partial demolition, it is more than 50% of the building that would be removed. Though the building or a version of it is seen on the 1936 cadastral map and the 1950s Sanborn maps, it has undergone a variety of material changes, including various siding materials and a modern rolling garage door. The size was also altered since the time of the 1936 measurements were noted. Criteria for contributing status. So in this case, a building must meet one or more of the following criteria to be considered contributing within a conservation district. So A, the building is identified as contributing on the National Register Historic District or property map. There is not a contributing resource map for Ardsley Park, but the principal house was built within the period of significance, and a version of the garage is seen on a map within less than 10 years of the house being built. So likely to be within that same period. And then B, the building is at least 50 years old and possesses integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. So a version of the garage is likely as old as the house, and in that sense, it still maintains integrity of location, setting, and association with the early automobile suburbs of Savannah. However, it has lost integrity regarding design, materials, workmanship, and feeling due to the alterations and material changes that have occurred throughout its lifetime. So just to kind of summarize the overall analysis, the building does not embody distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction because it has undergone the multiple changes over time. A survey from 2008 notes vinyl siding. From the street, it looks like the garage door and siding above it are still vinyl. On other elevations, from what can be seen from the lane, there appears to be a combination of wood and fiber cement siding. The architectural asphalt shingle roof is not original, nor is the overhead garage door. The exposed rafter tails do not match the style of the principal house. That does not necessarily indicate that it's not original, just that it differs from what is more commonly seen, where the house and outbuildings have similar architectural elements. And then as noted, the interior has modern beanboard sheets covering all surfaces and is sagging considerably. The garage has not, nor is it likely to yield information important in history that other more intact original garages in Ardsley Park still embody. And it has not achieved exceptional importance based on our analysis. The garage meets some but not all of the required contributing status criteria mentioned above. A large amount of the building's integrity has been lost, and very little original material is still intact. It is not clear whether the discrepancy in the sizes of the garage noted on the cadastral map and the current measurements indicate a different structure altogether, or in addition to what was there. The cadastral map also has the building on the property line along the lane where today's building is set back slightly from that. So just kind of going back there. And then we'll go to the site plan of the what it looks like today. Again, could be a just a slight discrepancy, but it is something that was noted. Staff finds that the partial demolition for the expansion of the one-story garage into a two-story ADU could be supported since the garage does not meet all of the above criteria and the degree of alteration has impaired much of the historic integrity of the original garage. So just going through, though we don't look at the actual design of what's coming in its place should this be approved, just to get a sense of what is there. This is what the house, the historic house looks like. And this is what the current garage looks like. The demolition plans are showing this wall and this wall as well as the roof. And then the expansion area would be this portion here. Just also to give a sense of the renderings of what is being proposed in its place. For additional stipulations, the staff just noted to ensure that the principal contributing building is not impacted in any way by the proposed work, and to ensure the new construction is evaluated by the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals and that all necessary permits are received, and then to document the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition. So with that, staff recommends to approve the partial demolition request to expand the existing garage structure at the rear of the property at 412 East Duffy Street with the following condition, because there is not sufficient criteria to support the building being contributing due to the multiple alterations and material changes it has undergone. With that condition, to document the building as per the city's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have a petitioner?
Good afternoon. My name is Eli Lurie. I want to thank Caitlin for doing such a thorough job in this report. I really just want to hit that there's really very little historic fabric left on this carriage house. There have been siding changes. The cadastral surveys show the building in several different locations on the rear setback line, setback further from the east setback property line. So it seems to have moved quite considerably over history, changed dimensions, and currently, as you can see in all of the side images, the entire roof structure is pretty much gone at this point. It bows very significantly. Most of the siding's in very bad shape. The front has some vinyl. The side has some wood. The back has some hardy board. So it's kind of just a kind of a Frankenstein at this point of different periods of improvements, alterations, stuff like that. And you can see it on the back. It has that, it's 2.5 foot setback. On the side, it has a 6-inch setback. It's really kind of just been an amalgamation of things over time. And inside, you can see that that ceiling has sagged significantly along that cornice fascia board inside, how it comes down several inches in the center structurally. With that, do y'all have any questions for me on this?
Any questions from staff members, board members?
My only question was related to the demolition process. Do you guys have any plans to try and either salvage or deconstruct any of the existing materials that would be salvageable? I know you mentioned there's a lot of wood rot, but
I mean, any materials that are good, I would have donated to probably like repurpose or something like that. We'll be taking down two of the walls and the roof structure, so we can donate those if there's any salvageable materials.
Okay.
Okay. We have one member of the public that wanted to comment. Ellie? Okay, we have no members of the public who want to comment, so we will close this discussion to board members. Let's go ahead and start with Scott.
I just would ask that whatever could be donated is donated. I think that's important.
Katrina Horner, no comment.
Courtney Bonney, no additional comments.
Brian Woods, no comment.
Pam Miller, no comment.
Kathy LeBrina, no comment.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to ask for a motion.
I just want to add real quick. I had a couple documents open at the same time. So when you're, if you read this, I accidentally put Duffy Street on here, but it's 46th Street in our recommendation.
Thank you.
Katrina Horong. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Eli Lurie, 412 East 46th Street, applicant number 25-001656-COA, with the following conditions. One, document the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition, and two, salvage and donate any salvageable materials. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Ann Miller, I second.
Okay, let's call for a vote. We'll start with Kathy.
Ann Miller, approved.
Brian was approved.
Courtney Bonney, approved.
Katrina Horning, approved.
Scott Krautzer, approved.
Jeff Dontrica, approved. Motion carries. Okay, now we are on to the part of the petitions, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Jonathan?
Just our usual recap of the stamped drawings. Nothing terribly exciting there. And then in terms of our new business, we talked about this, touched on just very briefly, but we've been working very closely with the City of Savannah on some proposed ordinance revisions related to special exceptions and variances. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our colleague, Jessica Baldwin with the City of Savannah, who's going to come up and give her a presentation.
Hey, y'all. Jessica Baldwin, City of Savannah. I always have to go last, and everybody's beat down by this point. So
that's good. We're more
maybe
reliable.
That's good for me, right? Who knows?
Yeah, that's good.
So this came about under the one, it's really a cleanup of a lot of issues that we noticed with the code in terms of variances and special exceptions. It also, the HDBR had requested some clear criteria about identifying special exceptions. So we wanted to make sure that that got included. So you'll see some stuff in here that's both for HDBR as well as you guys. In terms of the variances, they have variance authority that you guys do not have. You just have special exception authority. So if you get a little confused, just let me know. So is that the end? Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Let's try again. Okay. So under special exceptions, we added your review authority for special exceptions in the review authority portion of the code. For you guys, and then for downtown, we've added that they can also review local property designations. So should there be a individual landmark that becomes designated within downtown, they will have the ability to review that. And then here you go. We can see we have adjusted what can get a special exception. Currently, the code allows special exceptions for all Secretary of Interior standards as well as all design standards. And we just were a little uneasy about that, particularly since the Secretary of Interior standards are kind of our like high mark, and that's, you know, the ethos of most preservation ordinances. And we wanted to make sure that that couldn't be altered in any kind of way. So we removed that, and we noted that design standards could be changed of non-measurable standards. So these are standards that are really about sense of place and your and people's connection with the history of that neighborhood, and you guys are the authority on that, and so we wanted to make sure that you had that power and that wasn't something that went to ZBA where they necessarily don't understand that sense of place kind of concept. And then here we've added what that criteria looks like for special exceptions. It's very similar to the criteria listed above, but essentially it is says that whether the special exception be considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan, historic character of the neighborhood, and the provisions of this ordinance. So that in there gives you that ability. We've removed the word use, which I think was in there previously, and this will give you the ability to determine if those special exceptions meet that criteria. And then here we changed the variances for downtown. They had variance power in other portions of the code, but it wasn't properly included in this portion, so we added it here. You guys had, it was implied that you guys had variance power here, so we've removed that to provide further clarification. And this is talking about where the variance, where the downtown board has variance authority. Again, the same. And then this is in regards to appeals. Any variances that the downtown board gives will go straight to Superior Court. They don't go through back through the ZBA. And then lastly, for downtown as well, we made a minor change to allow staff to do staff reviews with to non-contributing resources. That's it.
Oh, let me ask you a clarification. What did you say about the last section before last about not going to the BZA but going straight to court?
So if the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review and offer grants of variance for, I believe it's signs, building setback, and lot coverage, that appeal, should it be appealed, would have to go to, would go straight to Superior Court. It would not go to ZBA.
That's pretty substantial.
I mean, it's like if ZBA grants a variance, then that variance goes to Superior Court. This is treating that the same way.
But it's kind of one process short-circuited. So basically you've got us, the petitioner, sort of effectively two bites of the apple, and now we're shortening it down to one. Is that correct?
I'm not sure I understand. To me, it's the same. Now, they can grant these variances. It's the same way if you went to ZBA and got a variance and someone appealed it, then you would go to straight to Superior Court. This is that same process.
So it, so if you, let's say you go to the HRB, it gets denied, then do you still have the option to go to the Board of Zoning Adjustments normally, currently?
No.
So it would still, regardless, all you're doing is changing it from going to the Board of Zoning Adjustments.
But if the Zoning Board of Appeals also denied your variance, you would go to court. You wouldn't go back to the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Okay, so what is the change here exactly? So what it is now?
Our proposed change, we are just clarifying that downtown has that ability and that the variances that they grant, which apparently hasn't been an active function of their board until at all. And so the variances that they grant now will follow the same as if a variance granted by the ZBA.
So can you also then dually pick whether or not you go to the HRB or the BZA?
Well, they can only do setback, lot coverage, and signs. So if you needed a variance for something else, it would have to go through ZBA anyway.
Interesting. But you're not adding in the process of being able to appeal the HRB to the BZA?
No, you can appeal their decisions,
right?
Not variance decisions. Other decisions that they make on a project could be appealed to ZBA, yes.
So why would you not be able to approve these particular ones?
Because they would go, it's the same process. It's a variance. It's not the design standard. So it's a different item. You're granting the HDBR would be granting permission to something that varies from the regulations. So in the same way that ZBA would give you a variance for something that is different than the regulation.
So the historic HDB Arts has the ability and authority to do variances?
For building setbacks, lot coverage, and signs. Correct.
That's interesting. Okay.
Anything else?
Thank you.
And I would just ask you guys to make a motion and provide a recommendation for the Planning Commission, because we plan to take this to them next month.
Okay, why don't we have a little more discussion about this? Kathy?
Pam Miller, no comment.
Brian Woods, no comment.
Jeff Notriga, I have reservations about basically historic review process, and having to go straight to Superior Court, which is a very expensive process, and not having another step in between that. And unfortunately, some of the decisions I've seen from that board really give me pause. So I am concerned that it would certainly, to me, feel a lot easier and more beneficial if there was a step where you're able to appeal and a decision from the HRB to the Zoning Board of Appeal.
You still can appeal decisions of the Historic District Board of Review to the ZBA, just not the ones that are based on that are for variances. That's three specific groups of variances that we have called out.
Yeah, and I just think that you should be able to approve all of them.
Okay.
So basically appeal all of them over to that board, because going to Superior Court takes a long time and is a very expensive process.
Super long time.
May I ask a question? Because maybe I'm a little fuzzy on this. If this is the Savannah Downtown Historic Board and the the HBR, what's our overlay here?
You guys are Victorian. This part is just in reference to that. There were other portions of the special exceptions and variances that related to you guys.
That talking about really is not under our purview.
Correct. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. That's why I was getting a little confused there. Like, why are we? Yeah, gotcha.
Could I interject something here?
Sorry,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Natrika.
Yes.
Would you mind if I interject something? This is Edward Morrow.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to. Hopefully, I can maybe bring a little bit of clarification. We're talking about adding, in essence, the quasi-judicial components of the Zoning Board of Appeals in a limited fashion to the HDBR.
Quasi-judicial board, yes.
Okay. But COAs, we're typically talking about COAs. So variances are usually routed to the Zoning Board of Appeals, and they act in that quasi-judicial fashion to make a determination on variances. It's the COA petitions typically that I think would be appealed to the ZBA that we're having concern about. In that regard, and correct me if I'm misunderstanding, COAs are not impacted. So the vast majority of things that would be heard are going to continue in the normal course that they typically would. We're adding within this particular geographic location, the historic landmark district, you now have an additional venue that will have that quasi-judicial power to dispose of variance requests specifically.
So then you're saying, if I'm understanding this, is you can go either path with those particular variance criteria.
No, the sign setback and building coverage will be done for downtown, will be done by the downtown board.
Okay, so you won't be able to take that variance directly toward the Zoning Board of Appeal.
It's just giving them a little bit of additional authority within their current jurisdiction.
Which they already had. We're just clarifying it.
We had not been exercising that, and we're saying we're going to send this to them as the subject matter experts within that particular jurisdiction to make a determination on their area.
Understand. Prior to doing this clarification, people were taking these to the Zoning Board of Appeal directly and not going in front of the HRB.
That is correct. That is correct. And similarly, they will continue to be routed to the HPC, from the HPC to the ZBA. This only impacts the HDBR, I believe.
Yeah.
Correct.
I'm sorry. There's just no way in the world I'm going to support HD. HRB getting more authority.
Yeah, I think I would echo some of the same concerns, because from what you've outlined, it sounds like you're stripping authority from this board.
No,
at
ma'am.
The same time.
No, ma'am. I would need to apologize if that is the way that appeared. Absolutely not. You guys will have the same authority you currently have. You now just have criteria for those special exceptions. So that's really what that part is for your board. There was an error in the code, and you guys were included in the variance section, but you've never been able to grant variances. The downtown board has always been able to grant variances, whether or not that's been used or not. I can't speak to why, but they have always had the ability to grant variances. So we're not actually giving them any more authority than they already have. We're just trying to clarify what that authority looks like and procedure for that authority.
But you are taking it away, though, from the Zoning Board of Appeals, then, effectively.
What are we being asked to approve, though?
I just need a recommendation from you guys so that I can take this to the next phase,
so
which is Planning Commission.
So that would be recommending what Jeff.
Yeah, if you guys recommend this or not, is what I need from you.
How can we recommend something we don't have anything to do with?
Well, you do have in terms of the special exception portions of the code.
We can specify special exceptions because I don't feel comfortable approving something we have nothing to do with.
I understand that completely. Yeah, we've just brought it in as a complete package, and that's where I think the confusion's coming in, because it's all under one kind of thing. But yes, ma'am, we're just looking for a recommendation from you guys about your
portions,
opinions,
which apply to the Historic Preservation Commission.
Jessica did a very good job. It's very confusing. This is really, as she put it in a nutshell, clarification here. You never could do variances. You can do special exceptions. The Historic Preservation, HDBR, Downtown Historic District Board, always had these authorities, but they've never exercised them. But they are, Jeff, to address some of your concerns, they're very specific. They're not that, you know, they can grant a variance like the ZBA for a wide range of items, and then you'd have to go to Superior Court. They are, you know, if there was a decision about a sign or what's the other one? Footprints. And
lot coverage, setbacks, and signs.
Yeah.
Those are huge, though. Those are huge land use issues.
Yeah, it's one document. Which,
well, that's already in, so we're not even changing that. So yeah. That's... I'm just asking for recommendation from your guys' opinion, basically. Yes, ma'am.
You could say, make a motion that we support the proposed changes related to our commission, Jeff, and not even comment on the other board. Correct.
But I mean, I get that they're two separate boards, but I think there's already issues within the city of people not understanding how the boards operate and what authority they carry and don't carry. So, I mean, I think one step further, the more that the authority and the powers of the boards begin to diverge and aren't consistent, I think you're just setting yourself up for further confusion among applicants about how the process works, because I mean, from today's meeting, we saw there's a lot of confusion about what step comes first. Do they come and get a variance or a recommendation on a variance and then go to BZA? Because it feels like that process is almost backwards, because so many of those decisions on the setbacks and the variances have a direct impact on the design of the project. So, you know, and I think the component that Jeff is raising concerns about is also the checks and balances of the areas of expertise of the folks that are on this board being different than those that are sitting on BZA. And sometimes you need that offset of expertise to provide relief for developers and applicants, because, you know, if our main concern is these preservation and these other issues, you know, we might be having a different point of view than what BZA is looking for. And if you're bypassing that ability to get relief and forcing them to go straight to court, I do think it has.
No, it's a great point, Courtney. But again, in terms of you all, meaning this group, the HPC, you could never grant variances. So
I'm not concerned about the ability for us to grant variances. What I'm saying is I understand that HDBR already has that authority, but again, I think it's going to be problematic if the two boards have different judicial and quasi-judicial authority. I think it's just.
They have the same, like you're both quasi-judicial.
Right. I understand that. But if one board can grant variances and another board cannot, I think it's already confusing with applicants about what.
I understand. There's a lot of differences in your board and the HDBR. So I think that it's a matter of us as staff to make sure that each applicant is properly informed of the options of procedures. And I know that internally at the city, we're working very hard to make sure that our entire staff is versed in what is happening with the changes that we have started to do, and as we'll continue to make, and we sit down with both development services and our team and have a lengthy conversation and review those kinds of changes, as well as with code compliance.
Well, maybe more importantly, this document should maybe level up to where both boards have the same amount of authorities and same roles. It doesn't
really, definitely look into that.
It doesn't really make sense to give, you know, I mean, assuming, you know, all children are created equal here, one of them have special powers, the other one doesn't, yet we effectively do the same thing just on different geographical areas.
Yeah, there are different rules and regulations. There's different rules for each board, which is why they have different authority than each board has different authority. So, but I understand. I'd be happy to look into that.
Thank you.
This will be going to the MPC for you all to vote on that.
Okay, great.
So you will have a chance to, but just as Jessica would noted, we have spent a lot of time over the last year looking at all the ordinances and the processes to try to make them work better. Courtney, it's a very fair point. It's very confusing and a lot of it was unclear. I think Jessica would agree with us on that. For example, as I said before, for the last 6-7 years, whatever it is, we were doing staff approvals for HPC districts. That was completely wrong. That was not allowed under the ordinance. So that, you know, we're trying to correct and make clear to people what we can do, what we can't do, and come up with a better process working with our partners at the city, which has been going well. So we totally agree with you that it can be very confusing for applicants. And the way, you know, the things are now, we just had a discussion today. Someone is not required to ask for a recommendation from you all if they need a variance for a project like the project today, if they're going to ZBA. They don't have to. We often people want to get a recommendation from you all because they think it will help them when they go to the ZBA, but they're not required to do it. So I know it can be very confusing because when people say to us, well, do I have to get a recommendation? No. And then they're like, well, should I? And we're like, well, so it's, I think it's, I mean, I don't know if Edward.
I mean, I read it every day and it's confusing about requirements to ZBA. No, this is a different section of the ordinance. Yes, it's a different portion. We're working on cleaning up a lot of things. Yes, ma'am.
I think it would alleviate a lot of the contention that you feel when we're in the room, because it's like, you know, like I was reading these things and the reason why I put out a phone call was because at what point do we say this is too many variances and we can't, you know, approve it without the steps being followed, you know?
I think the tricky part is it's really difficult to separate out, okay, what does this look like in the design if, okay, well, all of a sudden you're losing 2 feet of the building.
Right. And that's why the Forsyth Park project, which you still have not seen, they made the decision to first go to deal with getting their, changing the zoning, they were asked for some variances from the MPC for that. So when they were planning to come to you, to answer your question, Courtney, they would already kind of have an envelope. I mean, you could obviously still make your decisions, but that was the idea because, yes, I mean, I've worked in other areas where they tell people first go to the ZBA if you need a variance, get that worked out, then deal with the design because otherwise you get caught in a...
Yeah, right. Well, I've seen other jurisdictions where it's like you get your zoning and all your variances approved, but if it's denied and there's a reasonable reason you would have an exception because of preservation or other criteria that might, you know, overweigh that, then, you know, they could come to this other board and we can make a recommendation and kick it back to them. So I think that kind of ties into the concern about like if HDBR approves or denies a variance and they're like, oh, you know what, that's I get what you're coming from, but there's a bigger reason we need this variance. They should be able to kick it back to BZA and get input on them. You know, so you have a, again, that checks and balances before you have to say, no, you have to, you got to litigate it now, because that's, I think, a hardship for folks.
And it would certainly make sense if HBC had the right to grant variances. We could have streamlined at least a couple of the applications we had today. So, I mean, basically, I would just suggest maybe we go back and look at this.
That's a larger change that I don't know the city's ready to get into, to be quite frank. So I think.
I don't see how it's larger, though. It seems analogous to this change.
Okay.
To me, it seems like a perfectly congruent. Jonathan, do you have thoughts on that?
I mean, it's the city, you know, we work for the city. We obviously work for the MPC. I don't mean to make light of the situation, but, we work in collaboration with the city very closely on these things. It's something we can talk about with Jessica and Bridget and the rest of the folks.
No,
but I mean, there are some quirky differences between you guys and the downtown historic district. For example, they regulate paint color. You do not. No, I'm just saying, and that's because of, but that's because of the Georgia state law. That board was established, you know, long time ago, that was grandfathered in. They could regulate paint color. You guys can't. There are some, but I agree with you, Jeff. And like I said, this is going to be going, as Jessica noted, to the MPC, where I'm sure there will be a robust discussion about all the points you're raising. But just to be clear, the downtown historic district has always been able to grant the specific variances, as Jessica noted. It's just either it got forgotten or people didn't seem to be aware that they could actually do it. But we're not giving them that power by this.
Correct.
That's always been there.
Correct.
Yeah, but previously, though, I know that a lot of times those variances have gone straight to the Zoning Board of Appeals, but this will effectively stop that.
Oh, no, you're
that.
Correct about that, Jeff.
So will you still have the ability to track either one, or will you be forced to go for the Historic Review Board?
It is not say that it's required, so I guess you have that option.
Okay. Okay, so it will be an option basically where you as the applicant can choose whether you go to the Zoning Board of Appeals or the HRB.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, again, I just need a recommendation from you guys.
I think we lost a quorum.
So, yes, if you want to make a motion that just says you want to weigh in on what affects you all, the HPC, and not Jeff, the other board, that's how.
Do we have a copy of the complete proposed ordinance change?
Yes. Yes. I believe we have it on our
on the agenda?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we included that for you all. Right here, Jeff.
But to be clear, just because the BPA says they can, then it's an individual compatible. So we can still go back to individual compatibility and some of the decisions that the BPA.
This isn't changing anything related to that. Yeah.
Just because the ZBA said they can, doesn't mean
sorry to interrupt. Can you please turn on your microphone? Thank you.
So somebody comes to you all and proposes a design, and you guys say it's fine, and they need a variance, and you make a recommendation to the ZBA. They go to the ZBA, and the ZBA can approve the variance, or they could deny the variance. If they deny it, and that means that then they have to, as we were discussing with that ADU today, they have to come back, they have to change the design. They'd have to come back to you and go through the process, the design review process.
And take me through it the other way. They skip HPC, they go to the Zoning Board of Appeal,
They still need a, right. No, no, you're correct, Kathy. They need a COA to build their structure. So just because the ZBA, for example, the Forsyth Park project, which you all have not seen, that went through actually the MPC, not the ZBA, where they changed the zoning and then they got the variances. That does not mean that when it came, if it comes to you, that you all can't say, well, yes, the MPC said that, but we don't think it's visually compatible. Or whatever you would say. You may say it is, but no, yes, to answer your question, if they went first to the ZBA and got their approvals, they still have to come to you and you still get to apply your standards, Secretary of the Interior standards, design standards, visual compatibility, and they have to get a COA from you all. So yes, it doesn't trump you, if that makes sense.
It does. Thank you for explaining that.
Katrina Hornung, can I make a motion?
I think we're ready now.
Okay. Lost my... All right, Katrina Hornung, I make a motion that...
Thank you.
That the HPC recommends the changes made as it pertains to the Historic Preservation Commission.
Ann Miller, a second.
I guess we'll go for a vote. Let's start with Scott.
Scott Crotzer, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Courtney Bonnies and I.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Jeff Nentrica, deny. Motion carries forward. Thank you. I believe that concludes our business for the day. Jonathan?
Kathy Ledvina has another business.
Just
a quick question.
Sure.
In regards to the Forsyth project, is archaeology required there since they're digging down and creating that parking garage?
I'm not sure what the requirement there. We will, Kathy, we'll check on that in terms of, it's a great question. We'll get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Is there any way, because that's going to be such a long, protracted meeting, is there any way that we can do that as an individual special called meeting? I mean, there are 75 respondents to that project already.
It's a good point, Pam. We can definitely, I'll talk about that with our executive director and get back to you.
Yeah,
again, we have no... knowledge of when it is coming.
Right, but they could essentially next week say, okay, we've clarified those other issues that caused us to take it off and not go forward, and we would need to have that answer. So if we can get that clarified, at least to give
they
them
would have
some.
To, yeah, they would. They're definitely not going to be here next month.
Right,
so,
but I mean, to give them and us.
No, no, I think it's a very good. I agree with you.
Okay,
if it's going to be a 7-hour discussion. It would make sense also just for the other applicants. You know, yes, it's a good, great point.
Because
Thank
the you. Other thing too that I know from just working with people around in the community, a lot of people again, and it goes back to what Courtney was saying, they assume that we have this ultimate authority to stop this whole project, and we don't. And, that's part of the
sure.
problem. So they're
no,
gonna
it's, a, it's
here
a very good point.
Because
Pam.
They see
Thank
us
you.
As the last, their last step.
Yes. Yep. Thank
it's
you,
going to be very, I think it's going to be very contentious.
Yeah.
Do we know when demolition is starting?
I honestly have no updates on the
project. By the time that we've been sitting here, we received the court order that the court has accepted the abandonment of the rezoning and the variances that were associated. And so from my very cursory reading of it, all of those actions that are related, and of course, Jessica's probably also seen this email, all actions should cease from this point.
Yeah, there's a hold on demolition permits, so they can't do any demolition.
There you go.
So the archaeology, we're not in danger of anything. Yeah, we're not there yet. Okay. Thank you. Great update.
But it's a great point. Thank you, Kathy and Pam. Both of your points. All right. I think if you want to adjourn. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.